welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, April 9th, 2018. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250, and our access code is 449-389. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is Matthew chapter 26. We're going to read verses 47 through 56. Matthew 26, verses 47 through 56. And while he yet spake, lo, Judas, one of the 12, came, and with him a great multitude, with swords and staves, from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now he that betrayed him gave them a sign, saying, Whomsoever I shall kiss, that same is he. Hold him fast. And forthwith he came to Jesus and said, Hail, Master, and kissed him. And Jesus said unto him, Friend, wherefore art thou come? Then came they and laid hands on Jesus and took him. And behold, one of them, which were with Jesus, stretched out his hand and drew his sword and struck a servant of a high priest and Then said Jesus unto him, Put up again thy sword unto his place, for all they that have taken up the sword shall perish with the sword. Thinkest thou that I cannot pray to the Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels? But how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled, that thus it must be? In that same hour said Jesus to the multitude, Are you come out as against a thief? With swords and staves for to take me? I sat daily with you teaching in the temple, and you laid no hold on me. But all this was done that the scriptures of the prophets might be fulfilled. Then all the disciples forsook him and fled. Matthew chapter 26, that was verses 47 through, I think it was 56. Okay. Anyway, for anybody interested, we're going to start our Bible studies again next Sunday. We're going to have a Bible study. I believe we'll probably do it at 11 a.m. That should be a little late enough for the people on the West Coast. So 11 a.m. in this room. I'll post some information up on the page. You can find the page up on NationalLibertyAlliance.org. You click on the Monday night call and you'll see the Bible. Just call it Bible study, Sunday Bible study. And you click on that button and you'll get to a page that gives you some information. Subject matter we're going to focus in on, I think, is just the right timing is the rapture. So we're going to talk about that, probably spend a couple of weeks on that kind of a subject. And then we'll pursue other things. But anyway, Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, for anyone that's interested in Bible study. We used to have one quite some time ago, but it just got too busy and couldn't do it anymore. But I'm at a point where I think I need to get back to that. Okay, let's see. Last week we did file our New York case. And by the way, I think what I'm going to do, let me just go out to the site real quick and take a look. I'm not sure where I'm going to put it, but maybe under the welcome tab. I think I'm going to put also the weekly calls under there, particularly, you know, the weekly call, the Bible's class or Bible study. And I think we have a discussion group. We'll probably put that up there. And I think there's one other. I'm not sure how many groups are really going right now that are having active meetings, but I think there's only a couple. But anyway, I think I'm going to put it under the welcome tab. But for right now, you can always find it under the weekly call. Click on the weekly call, and then you can find whatever you know, whatever discussion group you want to get into, you can click on that button, get some information, and get access information. But again, it's going to be in this room anyway. People can come directly into this room. Okay. As we mentioned last week, we did file the New York State lawsuit against the governor and against both houses here concerning the gun issue, particularly the SAFE Act. But, you know, we're going to go all common law on it. Our right to bear arms. So we're going to go after all the laws in here in New York. They're all unconstitutional. They violate our unalienable right of being armed. But we did file that. We did update the papers. Now that it's filed, we filed the papers with the stamps on them, and you can get the number up there if you want on the page. I'll probably update that page, put a little more information. I believe at this point we're going to be having a conference up in Albany, New York. It's the Northern District Court of New York up in Albany. And there's going to be, they've already set a conference for July 2nd. So anybody, I don't have any details on that yet. It's probably, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning or something like that, 9:30 or something. But I'll have to get all the details. I don't have those details. I'm going to have to call the court and get that. I don't know, unless Jim, maybe if you've called the court, maybe you can let me know what the details are on that. Anyway, we will post that information. We'll get it out to the Room Observers Group so they can get the message out. We've got about 30 people, I think it is, 28, 26, I don't know. I haven't really counted them, but probably close to 30, if not 30, that have signed up for that particular lawsuit. And anybody that's in New York that still would like to get into that lawsuit, there's still some time, not much, but there is some time. Go out, you go out to nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight news, and click on New York SAFE Act lawsuit. I believe I put that under the grand jury, too. But did I? No, I didn't. Okay, well, anyway, it's there under the news, New York SAFE Act lawsuit. You can get the details of what we're suing for. We're suing for monetary damage as much as also our unalienable rights being violated. So, but again, if anybody in New York would like to get on to that, there's still some time, but you got to make it quick. They're going to have a cutoff date at some point. We did just update, which is going, actually it's going out in tomorrow morning's mail, our wherefore clause, which you can read that update up on the page, New York SAFE Act lawsuit page. So we updated the wherefore clause, and I think we filed an affidavit on someone that we didn't have at the time. Their name was already in there, but we didn't have the affidavit, so we updated that. You'll find that paper update there also. And we will post anything and everything we get from these people on this page. You'll be able to find it. So we have the action filed. I think it's a couple of hundred pages. That's because it's got a lot of affidavits and, you know, a lot of other information. I think the action itself is about 23, 24 pages, something like that. And then we have the addendum up there, like I said, it's dated. And they put a notice of electronic filing. So it's been filed electronically. We put that notice up here, too. We don't expect to hear from them for a while. Matter of fact, they're probably going to try. I'm talking about the governor and both houses are probably going to try to you know, of course, go through their games again, you know, waiting for a day or two before the time limit of their answer comes up, and then they'll challenge the case. We did have it served by sheriff. We mentioned that last week, so they should not be able to even consider challenging that they didn't get it processed correctly and served. So they'll try to go for a cause of action. But they'll have to do something to try to put it off as long as they can. I'm sure they're going to try to get a hearing or get to that hearing or get another hearing before time where they'll, you know, try to ask for the case to be dismissed or whatever. But we know their games. That's what they do all the time, and we're ready for that. So, okay, let's see. So again, anybody wants to get into that New York Safe Act, you got to act now, because there is going to be a point when we do get cut off. But I'm sure we can still get a few more people in there if they want to get in, get something in the next few days or so, a week. I don't think I have anything particular that I'm looking at. I've been busy all weekend and all day today, so I haven't really thought about anything planned to speak about particularly. So, Jan, do we have any questions? I guess we'll start there, and then we'll look for announcements.
I have a couple announcements first. They're in the newsletter, but I'll repeat them here. The National Constitutional Coalition of Patriots, or Patriotic Americans, is sponsoring pro-Second Amendment national rallies in all 50 state capitals. Now, that's next Saturday, April 4th, the 14th, excuse me. You can go to their website, which is https://www.facebook.com/the-PCCPA. And just scan down a little ways, and you'll find a clicker where you can open up a page that will give the location for each state, the time for each state, and the number of people that are signed up to attend in each state. Some of those numbers are getting up to, you know, like Pennsylvania is about 2,200. I think New York State was like 2,500. And so they're getting up to where they're going to have pretty good representation. So this would be a great place to go. Take some stuff representing NLA for handouts. I put, there are four different flyers on the COS page on the website now. The first one is a standard COS flyer. The second one's a COS for kind of for the militia. There's another one called America Needs Your Help Now flyer. And there's another one. I don't have it written down here. It's something about needing help anyway. You can download those four flyers, take your pick, pick the one you like, run off a bunch, take your business cards, go down to
the
Capitol.
Did we put one together focusing in very particularly on what National Liberty Alliance does?
Yeah.
I know we got the COS stuff and everything.
So. Yeah, we got the COS ones in there. One of those has, I forget if it's COS 1, has a place in the bottom where you can enter your name and telephone number so when you hand it out, people have a way of getting a hold of you if you don't have business cards. You can even make up, using
right,
information.
Right, but did we put a flyer on what we're doing with the administrations and the committeemen and everything else that we're putting out there?
We don't have one with committeemen on it.
We don't need the committeemen on, but we could definitely, what we're doing with the grand jury is the key. You know, I think it's too premature to put anything on the committeemen at this point.
Right.
But make sure we have something up there that really portrays who and what we are and what we're doing. So anybody who wants to create a flyer, put something together, propose it up to Jan, and we'll take a look at it, and we'll approve it as soon as possible and get it up there. People can download these flyers. And people in New York, anybody going up there from New York, definitely you should download a few copies at least of the New York case. You don't have to print the whole thing out, but maybe print just the action part of it itself. The memorandum, if you really want to put it all together, you can put the memorandum on there too, but that's probably going to be about 35, 40 pages. But if you're concerned it's getting too many pages, then just that the action itself. But again, flyers are the key thing, getting people up to our website, taking a look on our front page, see what we're doing and so on. But go ahead, Jan.
Okay, the second item is, as you all know, we have created a new course, Government by Consent course. It's not ready to run yet, but it's been announced about a week ago, and we've had about 70 people sign up already, and most of them are new members. So our membership is growing much more rapidly than it did in the past, and that's a great thing. So if you haven't signed up yet and would like to sign up to take the Government by Consent course, you can go on the website. It lists about 31 items that will be covered by the course. A lot of information there on everything you need to know to be a grand jury administrator. So take a look at it. And I think that's why people are so interested in it. They're getting down to the nitty-gritty, getting a lot of good input on what they're going to need to know. And that's the only two announcements I had. I do have one question for you. And you may see some humor in it. Would it be more professional to call the government employees useful puppets instead of useful idiots? And also,
well, instead let that just stand.
Judges and and lawyers liars, just say they don't tell the truth. You want to comment on those two, John?
No, we'll just let it stand the way it is. So.
Okay. That's all I've got, John.
All right. Anybody else have an announcement to make?
Not that I've heard from.
From welcoming committee or anybody from any other committee?
Nothing? Have heard not from any.
Okay. All right. Let me just go through a quick look at my list here to see if there's anything particular I want to talk about before we move over to Brent. I guess we'll do that. I'm kind of tired today anyway. I've been working all day. Gerard, are you here, by the way? Did Gerard get in yet? I don't see him in here yet. I
haven't looked for him yet.
Yeah, I see his consoles on here, but I don't see him signed in yet. Oh, yeah, wait a second. There he goes. He's hiding on us. Now, Gerard, you there? Unmute yourself. Hello.
Yeah, his phone is there. He's unmuted.
Yeah, but he may be muted. He's probably coming in on Skype. So.
Okay,
well, we'll move over to, is Brent here?
I haven't seen him either. I didn't see him at all.
Hmm. Maybe you can kind of breeze down to see if he came in on the other number.
I'm looking for him. Looking for him now. No, I don't see him.
Okay. All right. Well, Brent comes in. We'll go over to him for a while. Meanwhile, I guess we'll go right to questions. Gerard, if you are hearing this and you're just away from the mic, pipe in when you can. Let me know that you're here. Let's take our first call. Now, we only have one person in the queue, so anybody who wants to get into the queue, star six to get into the queue. So let's take the first caller. And it is Sarah from Utah. Go right ahead, Sarah.
Hi, this is Sarah. Can you hear me?
Yep, go right ahead, Sarah.
Okay, I just wondered if you guys would have any suggestions for me. Last November, I reported an incident with my husband to local law enforcement, and, you know, I was ignorant of just what I was getting myself into by that. So at this point, we have a trial date in June, and this has turned into a train that is taking off without me, as I can see that you guys well understand, where, you know, it's the state versus my husband, and I'm thinking, well, I'm the offended party, and I want this whole thing to go away. And of course, you know, they're not offering me any options. But I figure there's got to be some way that I, as the person who initially reported this to local law enforcement, and I'm being, you know, the only offended party in the matter, and it's really not a big deal. I should be the one that can put a stop to this, and I'm not sure how to effectively do that, and I don't expect
to get
it. Yeah,
well, are they trying to hit him with some criminal charges at this point? Or?
Yes, and I...
What
I
kind of charges? Can you tell us?
I don't know what the charges are called exactly, but I believe the word assault is somewhere in there, which makes it sound serious, but it really wasn't. And the thing is, okay, so recently someone told me that by law I cannot be compelled to testify against my husband if I don't want to. And I don't want to. I want the whole thing dropped. And I've was told, I spoke with the prosecuting attorney about a week and a half ago and was asking questions and presenting various what-if scenarios and so forth. And he, you know, he wasn't being mean, and he wasn't talking to me in a manner like he was trying to threaten me, but he was just stating very matter-of-factly, this is just how it is. And he was saying that I'll be subpoenaed, and if I don't show up to testify, a warrant will go out for my arrest, and if I'm not willing to testify against my husband, then I'll be considered what's called a hostile witness, and he'll still be able to process me effectively, and so forth. And I'm thinking, well, you guys aren't the ones that, you know, aren't the offended party. I am. And you know, we're working this out, and I've forgiven him, and it wasn't a big deal in the first place. And the punishments that they're prepared to recommend are just far beyond what I feel is needed or right in the matter. And I just want to make the whole thing go away. And I figure there's got to be some way I can do that. But, of course, I don't expect them to tell me how I can do that.
Okay. What you want to do is write an affidavit. Sit down and think about this. Just write the story the way you would explain it to someone on what happened, and just write it down on a paper. And, you know, we'll help you put it into an affidavit form. And but you want to get into a lot of details. I mean, you want to get into the, you know, exactly what took place and what you were doing and what you were expecting, and then, you know, maybe whatever change of mind you had. And then you want to talk about what these people are doing, escalating it to another point. Now, have they got brought in before a grand jury? Do they have an indictment?
No, there's no grand jury involved or anything like that.
Is this a town court?
I'm sorry?
Is this a town court or a village court or something?
It's a county justice court.
Well, I'm surprised they put the word justice in there. What state are you in?
Utah.
Okay. I don't know. We'll have to look into the Utah Constitution to see if they, and what authority is there for a county court. In New York courts, we have the New York Supreme Court, but county courts, and they're supposed to be court of records. You know, it's a joke anyway. But also the county courts here in New York are supposed to be court of records also. But go ahead.
Recently I was speaking with someone who suggested that I simply write a letter and mail it to the prosecuting, well, to both the prosecuting attorney and the
you want to make it stronger than that. You want to make it stronger than that. And look, you're not going to get anywhere. They're already hell-bent on something, and I don't know why, but they want to take this to the max.
I know, because I'm thinking, do they really want to risk this us looking the whole situation looking silly in the courtroom when, you know, it just sounds like, you know, a married couple that had an incident, as oftentimes, you know, married couples do, and then, you know, was not getting along, and then and we're working things out, and you know, I've already said, right, if I'm going to testify, I'm going to testify in behalf of my husband, not against him.
Okay,
I'm not going to lie.
Get your affidavit together. As I said, you don't have to make it an affidavit form right now. We'll help you make that an affidavit form. But get the paper down. You have to cover everything. And what you want to cover is also the part that they're pushing these things to extreme measures that you never anticipated, number one. And you want to, if you had a, these guys are way out of line, especially prosecutors, and they say things they never should say. They don't have this power and authority. They think they've got it, but they don't. There's two things, okay? If there is no injured party or an injured party willing to step up to bear witness against anyone, they can't do anything. If they're going to charge them with a criminal case, even with that witness, okay, they still need to get an indictment. And if they don't have an indictment, that's another problem. Is he in jail at the moment?
No, he was never arrested, only cited.
Okay. All right, so get all this stuff together. And get a hold of Jan, get a copy to Jan or to Jim, do you know how to get a hold? Well, you can go out to the website, and on our directory page, you'll see Jan's name there. There'll be an email address and a phone number, but we'll get us a copy of this affidavit. We'll look at it and read it, and then we'll propose the idea that I'm thinking of doing is that after I understand what's going on and I understand more about where this prosecutor is moving, have you spoke with the judge at all, or is this totally a prosecutor thing?
No, I've only spoken with the prosecuting attorney, and I have emailed the public defender multiple times saying, you know, my husband and I both just want this whole thing dropped. I'm trying to understand how to help my husband, and he won't respond to me except to say, you're the victim in the matter. I cannot talk to you. You must talk to the prosecuting attorney.
Okay, so again, write this down. Put that down there, okay? And especially whatever the prosecutor said, really think this out. Be careful. You don't want to exaggerate. You don't want to say anything that's not true, but you do want to get anything and everything you could think of. I also would suggest that whenever you go talk to these people anymore, that you bring a small recorder with you and let them know it's being recorded. Or if you don't care, I think Utah is a state. You can look it up online. As long as you're part of the conversation, you can record. Okay.
I just thought of something I should ask you. They do not have a physical address for me, so they cannot even deliver a subpoena to me. Does that take care of everything right there?
No, because do they have a mailing address?
They have a P.O. box address.
Well, they'll send it there, and then they'll put a warrant out for your arrest probably.
Okay.
You know, I mean, that's where they could go with this thing. And again, you never know how these people are going to act, and I have no idea why they're so evil. There's a lot of bad people out there already. Why do they have to chase people that aren't necessarily bad or evil? And you know, they just don't stop with their nonsense. But again, I would be very careful with this because they're playing a power game here, and then they decide, well, let's go after her too now, you know. And yeah, they could put a warrant, and if you get stopped at a red light for something, passing a red light or a stop sign or going a little too fast, and then they find out there's a warrant, you'll find yourself arrested. So I'd be very careful with that. But
okay.
If you get that to Jan, I'll take a look at it and we can further advise you. One of the things we might do for you is you know, after we look at that, depending on how we might want to go with this, we'll kind of help you design a letter of request for our help to the grand jury, and then we could do something on your behalf by filing a paper in the court on your behalf with your affidavit, and let's see where they go with that. But but again, I have to see the affidavit. Maybe there'll be a different way to go. Maybe we don't have to go that extreme. Maybe there's something else we can advise you to do, or maybe we'll advise you to try something first, and if that doesn't work, then maybe another thing. But do that, and we'll see.
Let me just run this past you real quick. So recently someone suggested I simply send a letter by mail, physical mail, to both the prosecuting attorney and the public defender simply saying, now this baffled me a little bit because I didn't think this sort of thing would work, but they suggested that I just simply state that I dropped the charges against my husband and then state that by law I cannot be compelled to testify against him.
That is true.
Because I'm thinking, I was under the assumption
that sounds like a good idea. You could try that first. And see how
that
goes.
Okay, and see what happens.
But
okay.
What you want to do is a couple of things,
John,
you want to do. Okay, Yeah.
This is April. I actually had that situation. Can I answer that?
Sure.
Okay, I had the same situation. Me and my husband had a test, my ex-husband, I should say. I didn't want to press charges, but I wanted a protection order. The magistrate went ahead and put charges against my ex, and they were going to put him in jail. I did not want to do that because that's the father of my children. Even though we weren't getting back together, I still didn't want to do that. You don't have a subpoena to go to court, right?
A few days ago, a message was left on my voicemail by someone at the prosecuting attorney's office saying, we need a physical address.
No, that's not my question. You don't have a subpoena, right, as of now, right?
No subpoena.
And they don't have your address. They cannot make you testify. Do not go to court. I didn't go to court, and what they did is they reduced the charges to indecent conduct. So just don't show up at court.
Okay.
Well,
they threatened me, too. But as long as you don't have a subpoena, you don't have to go to court, and they cannot make you go to court. Make sure that they don't know where you're at, and make sure you just don't go to court. They will reduce his charges to indecent conduct or something like that.
Okay, but listen, this is very important, though. You do want to respond to that. If they left a message on your phone, they're looking to get a hold of you, and they
so
may do just anything to do that. So, but that idea with
do,
a letter, but the idea
write a letter.
With a letter that she has is exactly
that's
it.
Right.
But she, you want to do
write
it
a
certain way. You want to
write a letter to court and say, I am dropping whatever charges that you are putting on my husband. I've reviewed them, and I am not pressing those charges. I refuse to come to court because I will not testify against my husband, for this has gotten out of hand. And you send it to court and you just don't go. They can't do anything. She didn't do anything against the law, so they can't do anything against her. They threatened me too, and they did nothing.
You never know, but she's in a different state. It's a different court. It's a different people. Attitudes are different. And it sounds like they're hell-bent on doing something. And they're already let me just tell you what I think you should
this
do.
This prosecuting
and then you can
attorney,
have your final statement.
I'm told that this prosecuting attorney, if I understand correctly, not only is he recently new to this court, I think he's recently new altogether. So I think he's just, fired up and ambitious.
Here's what you're going to do. Who did you went to the sheriff's department or the police department, the town? Who did you go to?
It was in the county. So it's the sheriff's department
did you make the complaint? You made the complaint with the sheriff?
I actually went to a local police department, but the location of the incident was in the county part of town, and so it was they had someone, a sheriff from the sheriff's a deputy
from the
sheriff.
Did you talk with the deputy?
A deputy.
Yeah, but did you talk with him about dropping the charges?
No, I didn't. I don't know what to do.
Before you even do anything else, maybe you might want to talk to him about what's going on and see how they go about it and tell him, look, I don't want to go forward with this. Do you have children?
Yes, but they're grown.
Okay. All right, well, look it. You know, this is what I suggest. I think this is a good idea. It's a wise idea. Let's try with a letter first. But you want to certify that letter to begin with. And I suggest, again, if you want some advice on once you write the letter and you want some advice, we'll talk to you about it privately. We could do that. But that letter is a good idea, and I'm thinking, depending on the contents of the letter, you want to do it as a sworn statement and let it be known in that sworn statement you have no intentions of pressing charges. And then we could look up and see what statutes they have, because they probably have statutes on this, like you said, where, a wife and a husband, they can't really go up against each other. And that's why they usually do these things in the family courts and stuff. They, they try to work those things out. But, that's where we can go with that if you want to help. And if you want to just write the letter and see where that goes first, that's good, too, if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, I would
but
like to do that.
But if it escalates and you can't shake it away and it's still coming at you, then we could try that other idea I spoke to you about. So,
okay, should I speak to someone later to get clear on? It sounds like you're recommending that I write this letter in a particular way, and I don't remember everything.
Well,
you said.
I'd like to know what the contents are, and make sure you don't say anything, or make sure you do say certain things, and that I can only know from the conversation. But if you get a hold of Jan tomorrow, he could try to get a hold of me and get me in on a 3-way call.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I really appreciate your help.
All righty. Okay. Let's take our next caller. Frank, Voiptala, what state you in?
It's Frank in New Jersey.
Frank from New Jersey. How you doing, Frank?
Good, buddy. So a couple of things. I'm doing the Trenton National Coalition of Constitutional Patriots. It's a newly formed group. And when I was up in Queensbury in Lake George, we had the Denham's Bay Sport and Gun Shop, so I was a member there, and I contacted them, and Sean Garvey was interested in attending, and I started to tell him about the National Liberty Alliance. So I wanted to let you know that you should probably, go on the internet or, and look up Denham's Bay firearms and talk with the president, and they have a lot of contacts and a lot of people that you may already have that we could get involved with you guys, and we also want people in Albany, you know, but I'm doing Trenton, New Jersey. I'll be speaking down
right
there.
Yeah, I'll talk with Jim. Jim, if you, I'm sure he's on the call. If not, he'll hear the call later. And what was the name of that group again?
It was the group is the National Coalition of Constitutional Patriots. We're on Facebook. Michael Clayton is the one that started it. He's an Oath Keeper. You know, he's 3%er. You know, you got to have some kind of force behind it. But he knows about the sheriffs. I told him that I spoke with Sheriff Mack here in New Jersey many times about doing our sheriff project. And he's on the ball.
Are they heading down, shall I say, to the Capitol? I think it's next weekend for the rally. Are you heading to yours?
Yeah, I'm going to Trenton because I'm speaking there and helping to organize. But if I was up in Lake George, where we have our vacation home, I would have did the Adirondack. I'm in the Albany one, but I'm not. I'm in New Jersey right now. That's my permanent residence, but we have a vacation place in New York. And the SAFE Act is really changing. I feel like I'm an injured party because now I won't retire in New York with that SAFE Act.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's really ridiculous. And then I looked at the district opinions too. And the other question, the final question I have is, do we want to maybe at some time down the road have a lot of people do amicus briefs and pick something simple? Like if you look at what these district courts are rebutting the Second Amendment on, it doesn't make any sense. They're telling us that we don't have the right to the arms that the military has, that it's just the militia.
Right.
And we all know that's wrong. We have all the founding fathers.
We've got plenty of history to show that that's wrong, and I don't know if anybody brings that up in the court. We've heard of lots of cases going up against the gun laws, and they haven't really gotten anywhere. But I believe that they really haven't made the case in the proper way. I think we have made the case in the proper way, and they got to answer us, otherwise they default. And that's the other thing. You remember, they're dealing lawyers to lawyers, and they'll have backroom meetings, and the people paying the lawyer or lawyers to go up against the state, you know, they don't realize it, that they're controlled to some degree, and the judge, they may even set the stage right at the beginning. Let's get it straight here. You guys are not going to win, but let's see what we can do here, and don't bring this up, don't bring that up, and don't bring the other thing up. Believe me, that's how they talk. And
I believe you.
We need to come in as the people. And they don't take us into the back room, so we become a dilemma for them. And they can't control us. They can't really sanction us. They can't take away our license. We don't have no license. We don't want their license. We have an unalienable right of access into our courts to get justice and so on. So that's our position. So they're going to have a little bit more of a hard time. It's going to be interesting to see how it goes. And a lot of it is going to depend on how many people show up. I mean, I can't believe that they already set a conference date up. And they said about 90 days away, so I find that very interesting. And I'm glad to see that, because that gives us an opportunity to go up there and force. And so hopefully people are going to come up and force, especially the people living here in New York and those living close by who want to take a little bit of a trip, you know, to come to this hearing. But we are going to notify the court once we confirm things. We're going to notify the court that if they're going to make any changes, they better make it at least 30 days advance, because we have people traveling long distances, and we're not going to deal with them doing what they've done to us in the past. They changed the dates the night before, literally, and we had made a lot of phone calls trying to stop people to go up to the courts, and this is in the beginning when we were first learning. And so it's a game they play, you know, they'll change the date in the last minute to try to frustrate people. But anyway, we'll see how things go with that.
So,
but
John,
I will, James, if you're listening, I'm sure I'll be talking with James anyway tomorrow, hopefully. And if he's not in tonight, I'll tell him to listen to this call around this mark about, what was it, about, it's about, I guess you started on the call about 10, and get the information.
Because you could get a lot of people in this Albany thing out for you and to come out to that conference. I mean, I think you should have a speaker, an NLA speaker, at this Albany event. I think you should reach out. I mean, we have the Facebook.
Well, I agree. I mean, you know, I can run up there, or Gerard can go up there. We've got a few people that can go up and speak, and but we'd have to be invited to speak. And, you know, so someone has to take that bull by the horn to make a connection and make us a connection so we can speak to someone about speaking. But we'll see what we could do on that. But, yeah, this is New York especially. It's really, really important that we make some good flyers up, and some people make copies of the New York case that we have here, and get information out, and also let them know about the July 2nd conference call. But if we put that on a flyer, Jan, by the way, someone needs to put a flyer together for this. Jan, if we put that on a flyer and we put a date when the conference is going to be, in the court, we want to make sure that they understand that they need to really connect with us so that if that date changes, they can get the email on that. So, all right. Anything else, Frank?
I'm sorry about that. Okay. Thanks, John.
All right. Appreciate it. Gerard, did you get here yet? Calling Gerard. What do you do, fall asleep on us again? I don't know. Okay, let's go to our next caller. I think it's Julian from Texas. You got the mic?
Hello?
Yep.
Yeah. Julian, Galveston County, Gulf Coast, Texas.
All right. Go right ahead, Julian.
Yeah, I just wanted to know if I could get like a synopsis from you guys, what's been going on in about the last maybe year or so. I know y'all are attempting to make some contact with some sheriffs and sending out notices to judges and a few other things that were going on. I kind of dropped out of the scene and I'm doing some studies, and then of course was working a lot.
we were making connections with all of the judges, federal and state levels, and sending out papers to them, the sheriffs, and all of the governors. I mean, pretty much, and Congress, on the U.S. end, we didn't do anything with the state congresses. Also, all of the judges, the federal judges, and a lot of the state judges. I think we had all the judges. And we were doing fax blasts. The machines were running constantly, and we were getting a lot of things out to a lot of people. So they're very much aware of us. Now we're kind of buckling down and focusing in on indictments, and we've done a few indictments. You can check our page for indictments. Go to the National Liberty Alliance. Let's see, that would be under the grand jury. If you highlight the grand jury, you'll see that we have, we do have a few indictments up there. We also have some, we're looking at some other things. We're looking at the 9/11, trying to put something together, find the targets for that. We've got a lot of information. We know that it was done by insiders, and we need to find out who those insiders are. We kind of have an idea. We kind of know who a lot of them are, but we have to get some, straight-out evidence or something to be able to go after certain people. So anyway, we have a committee working on that. We do have, if you go to, I think it's on news, on the news, you can go and click on our radio and TV interviews. And let's see, when was the last one we did? We did a few of them. I don't know if they've been posted up there. You might want, there's some videos down below that we had, some interviews with. So we were on Gran Torino, something, whatever that is, some other group of people were doing something on the internet, and they were reading our papers. But if you listen to some of those radio programs out there, looking for something that's recent. I'm not seeing anything up there that's really recent. The latest was, it looks like in December, we were on Twister Radio. But we've been on a couple of interviews since. Jen, are you aware of any of the audio to try to get up there for the last few radio interviews we did?
Well, the problem is that they're with Randy Yarborough on the Lion in Denver area, and you can go to that website for the radio station and listen to them, but we don't have a way of downloading them and putting them on our site.
If you get that, drop that, that website into my Skype, And I'll go out there and see if I can't download it. You know, when you start playing it, you should be able to, it's coming down onto your computer as it is to listen to it. So you should be able to grab it. I'll see what I could do.
Okay.
And we'll get those up there. We'll be going on to, you know, well, Roger Landry with Liberty Beacon will be on his TV program very soon. He wants to try to take us on weekly. But really, to catch up with a lot, we're doing so much. You really want to kind of listen to those things. I mean, we're looking at the committees of safety. We're looking at working with the committee men, which is the committees of safety, become that eventually. That shows our history in the beginning on how we became a nation. It was through the committees of safety, and the committees of safety morphed into the committee men. So we're working on that political process to take that back. Of course, we're working on the grand jury process. We're doing indictments now. We opened up a case up in Albany. It's been open for quite some time now, maybe 8 or 9 months. And we're using that. We opened that up for the purpose mostly to, as a depository and a place to put our indictments and to be under the auspices of the court. Of course, they're not very happy about it. We do make notifications to Jeff Sessions of everything we do, and he knows we need U.S. attorneys down here. But we do know he's busy, so we're just kind of hanging in there, see where that's going to go. We notify the president at his request last year. Well, actually, it was 2016, the end of that, when he was running for president. We kind of made some contact with him out west with some of the things out there with the Bundys. Not direct contact, but in between, you know. But so those are a lot of the things we're doing. So a lot of things have changed. It really hasn't changed, but we're maturing and moving ahead and doing different things. Of course, our membership is building up. We're approaching 7,000 now. And so that continues to grow, and we're looking for critical mass that'll take us into the system. So, but radio programs, we'll get the latest posted, and that's probably the best way to get more detail of where we're at and what we're doing. You know.
All right, appreciate it.
Okay, anything else?
No, but I'm going to look back into that committee of safety again because I think that's where I left off. That would seem to be something that interested me here in Texas.
Yeah, if you can get committee of safety going in your area, that'd be a good thing. And you know, we'll be training people very soon on in the course we're going to be covering on the committee men. And some on the Committee of Safety and how the Committee of Safety became the committee man and how to go about becoming a committee man and what our plan is to take control. It's a pretty simple process. We don't need a lot of people to take control of each state. You know, we can literally do it with about a half a dozen people in each state. Of course, more is better, but we can do it that way. But we'll explain all that as we go. We're not ready to really talk too much about that at this point in time. But that'll be in the course. We'll be getting things on the committee, man, and we'll also, you know, the book we're putting together also, you know, once I get that together, that's going to cover everything plus, I mean, a lot of stuff. So, okay?
All right. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Okay, let's take next caller, Veronica.
Hi, John. How are you doing? This is Veronica.
Good, yourself?
Fine. I was listening to the woman from Utah, and I would strongly recommend to her that she find a mediator in her area there. If there is a group that does mediation that are not bar licensed, that might be the way she wants to go. And when her and her husband get to an agreement, they can take that agreement and just go slap it on the file.
That's right. That's a good idea.
Yes. That way they've gone one-on-one and worked out their differences and no need for a court.
Right. Good idea.
Okay. You're welcome. Thank you, John.
Okay, thanks, Veronica. Okay, let's go with April. Go right ahead, April. April, I see Jim, you're also unmuted, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really. I don't know who
did that.
Well,
I guess I've been unmuted the whole time. I've been trying to mute myself so that, you know, if I say something or do something.
Okay, but, well, did you want to talk? Because you're in a list here and you've been unmuted, so.
Well, I just wanted that lady to, I just wanted that lady to go to, from before, to go to intake and fill out an intake, because then I can call her and work her through the affidavit and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, with her, I'll you know, look, I can't do this for everyone, but I think this is a real simple one. If she does a good affidavit, I can do a one-pager if it's necessary, or at least give her some thoughts and ideas, you know, on what to do. But she's got a lot of things, and she'll try to figure out what it is that she needs or wants to do first. And maybe the letter is the best way to go first. The mediator that Veronica brought up is a good idea. And again, you know, if these people just don't stop, then, you know, we can help a little bit. It's not going to be too much of an energy from us to help her with this. It's pretty simple from our perspective. So.
Okay.
But we'll see where she goes with that. Meanwhile, did you hear the other caller for up in northern, a little further north of you in New York? Goodness, what is that, Lake George? I guess there's a group. Are you familiar with that group?
Actually, the group that he was talking about was down in Jersey.
Yeah, but he mentioned they had some kind of a group similar to that up in Lake George. And he mentioned the name of it, National Coalition, and I didn't get the rest of it, but I figured you can go back and listen and get the name of that. If you can make contact with those people, it would be good. You're going to be up at the rally next weekend?
Well, I'll be there. I wasn't.
Do you know who's running it? That maybe
really,
we can get in there
really
as a speaker.
I didn't really confirm myself with, like, you know, writing up flyers and stuff like that, because I just, to tell you the truth, I just never thought of it. Really, I was just going to go there. I wasn't thinking of, like, using it as a springboard. I've been trying to get other things accomplished there, you know. But it doesn't sound like a bad idea, and I have a whole week, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well, are you familiar with any of the people that are putting this thing together up here in New York?
I saw it
on. Do you think you can make contact with them and maybe get them to, maybe we can speak up there?
Okay. I'll get a hold of them. But
yeah, I'll talk with Gerard. Maybe Gerard could run up. He's not far, so.
No. Okay. He can get his colloidal then, too.
Yeah, there you go.
Kill two birds with one stone. Okay.
Well, stop killing those birds.
I'll get on it.
Okay.
You know.
All right. Anything else?
Print out some flyers or some little postcards, and just have the first caption, the heading of that thing, of our court case, and then just hand them out. And for more info, go to NLA. You know.
Yeah. Well, we should put together, you know, a half-page flyer. You know, you can print them out pretty quickly and then cut the pages in half, and you get a lot of flyers like that and a little basic information of NLA, what we're doing, you know?
Yep.
So, and especially this AVAC, you know, get them to that page, especially here in New York, and get them to that SAFE Act, and we'll put a note on the page. We're still taking applications for anybody who wants to get involved, you know, taking affidavits. So.
Well, that would be good. That's probably the way we should go, because then we could get another 300 people or something like that.
Well, yeah, it would be nice to get a few hundred in there, yeah.
But, But you got to make sure that you put that on that welcome page and get me that URL, or at least I'll copy it. You got to have that that safe active. Wherever you're going to post it, hurry up and do it.
All right, I'll let's talk tomorrow or something, because we got to talk about
that
other paper we've got to do anyway. So let's try to connect. All right?
Exactly. All right.
And I wanted to talk with you about one of the papers that I took down from the file depot. And but we'll talk. I got two of them out, so just one that had a problem.
Call me in the morning.
Okay.
All right, yeah, call me in the morning.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Sounds good.
All right, bye. Okay, April, you've been unmuted.
Yeah, I was just trying to get in with that lady because I had that same situation, including being threatened. And
yeah.
I just didn't go to court. I didn't respond. I didn't write a letter. I just didn't go, and they just reduced it to disorderly conduct.
Right, but they didn't they seem to be pushing her. This guy goes, you know, this prosecutor said, oh, we're going to call you anyway, and you treat you as a this or that. I mean, that's kind of scary.
Oh. Yeah, but that's just a threat. They're empty threats. If you don't go to court, then they have nothing to prosecute him on. They have to reduce it or dismiss it.
There's
if he goes to court,
in this world, there's nothing. If there's anything I learned, there's and this is Bill Thornton statement here. There's nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action, and in this case, especially in a court, nothing.
Yes.
These people, when they're ignorant and they get an attitude or whatever's going on in that stupid brain of theirs, it gets scary, you know?
It's the money game. They just want the money. That's all it is. So that's why I said about that, because I was down that situation already, so I know where it goes. But all the caller said, that is a good idea as far as mediation goes. If they can, they don't even have to go to a mediator. They can just write a letter that they both agree, both sign it, and both take it to court that we are working things out. But she has to make sure she does not Yeah, she has to not state anything she said in her original report to the police or however she did it. She has to not state anything because she does not want that being used. Hmm. She just has to say we had a fight and we worked it out.
Yeah. All right,
so whatever
we'll
she
see
does,
what happens.
I hope she's listening.
She'll be able to get something with a letter or something and it'll just settle it down. So
that hit a nerve with me because I was down that road. And my ex was actually arrested. So I just hope that she heeds some of the advice, and they're going to scare you, but you just stand your ground, and it will go away eventually, but they're going to do something for him. I doubt they're going to dismiss it because they never do, but they have to reduce it if she's not there as a witness to testify.
Mm-hmm.
And if she's not subpoenaed, they can't put charges on her, no matter what state you're in. If you're not subpoenaed, they can't put charges on her. Yeah, that's why I was saying that. Okay, that's all.
Okay.
Bye.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, let's take our next call. Gerard, are you here yet? And has Brent come in yet? Anybody see Brent yet? I don't see Brent in tonight.
No,
okay.
I didn't
let's
see
go.
Brent yet.
Next caller, let's see. We're going to go to Heather from Utah. We only got a few people in the queue. If anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6. Go ahead, Heather.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Oh. All right. This is for Sarah in Utah also. I don't know what county she's in and whatnot, and I'm not proud to say I've had quite a bit of experience with the county court. And I'm from an extremely small rural area, and the judges around here do not know very much at all. I've been through 2 or 3 different district courts. The judge I'm dealing with right now, he doesn't know what to do, so he just keeps putting my court date off and keeps avoiding me. I show up for court, and he won't show up. So it's been going on for 3 months, and it's just for no registration ticket. And they're just so baffled, they don't know what's going on. So if Sarah needs any help or anything, if anything's for support or for a learning experience, I'd be more than happy to help her or anything with her going through court or writing affidavits or anything like that.
Okay. All right. Well, you can get your information to Jan, and we'll make a connection with you guys if you want to talk. So.
Okay. And then I did have a question. I've got 2 court dates coming up this week. This is the judge that keeps putting me off, and I kept telling him I'm trying to get into a court of record. I don't know how to open a court of record, but they won't answer my questions. I've given them affidavits. They won't do anything. They just keep going on with what's supposed to be a trial, and now this appointment I'm supposed to go in for now is for a trial scheduling. So they've scheduled an appointment to schedule a trial, and I just don't really know what to do when I get there because they're just not asking.
Well, you know, and what's this for? Is it some kind of...
It's for no registration.
A trial for... Okay. Look, at worst cases, they're going to hit you with a fine or something of that nature. Of course, it costs you more money to fight it, though. You're not going to fight it in that court, that's for sure. You'd have to take it. There's only one way to go with that, and that would be into the federal court because it's a violation of your right of due process. And so you can't take it into the state court. They don't have the jurisdiction. The federal court is the only place that their jurisdiction is at. And it's involved, and, if you don't know how to open a court of record, then that's telling me that you kind of maybe lack the knowledge to be able to write the papers and get it in. So you need to learn that. Everyone needs to learn that, even especially people who haven't gotten into, you know, into problems with the courts yet. The day's coming, so you know, you never know when you get stuck in these things. So you want to be able to get out. So if you write your own papers and do things, then it could be pretty easy, and you could do it. You can move the court right over because there's a court number there. You know, they have an index number or a case number, whatever they call it, and you could take that and move it into federal court for cause, and it shouldn't cost you anything to do that. And but again, you have to write the papers, you have to have a strategy, and you have to keep it simple and know how to do that to keep it simple.
Okay, well, when I asked for the plaintiff to have an affidavit of how I've harmed or injured them or anything else, it took them 3 weeks to find a plaintiff. Once they found one, of course, it's the state of Utah. That's all I've asked for is something like that, and they don't know what to do with that.
Well,
if they
say they're bringing you to trial, okay, you got to ask them, is this a criminal court? I don't know if you've seen those videos out there that you can use a little bit of that. You know, this is going to trial. Is this a criminal? What kind of court is this then? If it's not a criminal court, then, I'm not sure what way they go with that. But if they claim it is a criminal court, then where is the indictment, you know, and where is the jury? You know, but of course, this is so simple. It's probably, again, I hate to tell you to do that. Look, I do this myself. I write a paper, okay, whenever I get a ticket, which I rarely get a ticket, but if I do, I write a paper. Half the times I never hear back from them again, and half the times they still come out after me and I just pay the fine. I put it in a folder, and maybe one day I'll go back and sue them all collectively. Sometimes it's just cheaper and a lot less hassles and a problem to just pay it, the $100 or $50 or whatever it is that they charge you these days. I know I went with someone just recently, and they got $30 fine, but then the state gets $100, so $130. I mean, go figure that out. The state gets their piece in all these courts, and that's why they give them the authority to put these what's called Nisi Prius courts or kangaroo courts, you know. But some of this garbage we have to live with and stay focused to try to, you know, get rid of this stuff. But, and again, that's our plan, is to get rid of all these courts that come out with code violations that they're just making money off of us. That's all they're doing.
All right. Yeah. Well, kind of hoping to find it once to learn about court, which I know that's not the place to learn about it. Is it?
Well, this is a good place to learn, though, if you want to learn. But you got to do some homework, you know, and figure out how you're going to approach it, you know. So.
Well, and the other thing is, where it is such a small town or small county, every time I drive, now they're pulling me over. So I've got, you know, the tickets just keep adding up. I thought if I don't fight it now, I either have to give in and go get my car registered and license and all that stuff with the state, or I need to put a stop to it now just so they know that, you know, that's my right to travel and I don't have to have the registration. And so that's kind of why I wanted to fight it. And so that's what I was wondering, if I could just challenge jurisdiction where it's, you know, ask if it's civil or criminal, and if it's criminal, then ask which jurisdiction.
Yeah, be a little careful. If you're getting a lot of tickets on this and you're being brought into the same court, and, you know, these people can get out of hand with you, so be careful on that.
Yeah, I think they're trying to make an example out of me, and I'm trying to make an example out of them. So.
Yeah, but remember, they control the court. They're going to win unless you move it out of there.
Yes, and they've got a lot more time.
If it comes nasty where they're really trying to come out to get you, maybe try to hit you for 30 days in jail or something like that, you know, then, you know, you got to be careful because you never know where these people are going to go with this stuff.
Right. Okay, well, thank you so much. And, yeah, if there's a way I can get a hold of Sarah, then maybe we can help each other out, at least get some learning experience out of it and support.
All right. Well, if Sarah wants to talk with you, she'll leave his her information with Jan, and you can get a hold of Jan, and Jan can, share the information between the two of you so you can talk. So.
All right. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Okay, hang on 1 second here. Gerard, are you here?
Brent is here now.
Yeah, I see. I saw the message. Gerard, are you here? Calling Gerard. Where is he?
Well, he signed in and been here for 50 minutes. So.
All right. Well, we'll move over to Brent. I'll try to get Gerard on the phone, see if he takes over the control here. I'm totally exhausted. I've been up early this morning and working all day, getting all this paperwork out of here. So I'm pretty much caught up on a lot of the paperwork. But Brent, how you doing, Brent? Are you ready to take the mic? Star 6, Brent, you should be able to unmute yourself. Star 6.
I just unmuted.
There he goes. Okay. Let me introduce you. Okay, this is Brent Winters. He's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, go right ahead.
Thank you. My comments may or may not be the views of National Liberty Alliance, but they're mine. And National Liberty Alliance is nice enough to let me say a few words. Well, I learned something this week that, well, it was last week, but it was brought to my attention again because of the conversation I had with the individual and his wife that listened to these calls. And he said to me, well, my wife calls you Hector Heathcote. Hector Heathcote. And that rung a bell in my head, but I couldn't quite place it. And I'd been called other things. I was on the radio back in the Wabash Valley, and people at Indiana State used to get together in the morning, and they said they had coffee with the judge. They called me the judge. Here come the judge, and so they'd have coffee and listen to the radio program. But I had to look up Hector, but when I looked him up, I remembered who he was, and I remember him from a long time ago. He was a young fella, a kid, that lived during the time of the American Revolution. He was a cartoon character. And Hector was always, he was in the militia, the Minutemen. He was always late. He always forgot something. He was always the poor individual, the one guy that never got the word. But one thing about Hector, so this isn't so bad that people would call me Hector Heathcote, because Hector, even though he was wrong a lot of the time, even though he made a lot of mistakes, he was right-headed. He'd bounce back and keep heading in the right direction. And so to be compared to Hector isn't such a bad thing. I know after this many years, I may have made a lot of mistakes. I continue to make mistakes, overlook things. And at the same time, I like to think I'm right-headed. As a matter of fact, the word righteous was invented not so long ago. And the older word was right-wiseness, right-wise, W-I-S-E. And the man who first translated the Bible into English from the original tongues, the Hebrew and Chaldee of the Older Testament and the Greek of the Newer Testament, was a fellow by the name of William Tyndale. They burned him at the stake for his efforts, by the way. But he's the one that did it. And he came to that word that people said should be translated right-wise or right-wiseness, and he shortened it up. He said, that's too cumbersome. We'll just call it righteous and righteousness. And so that's where we got the word. But it means to be right-wise. Wise is an old suffix that speaks of direction. For example, if we say that person or a thing moves clockwise, that means it moves in the direction of the clock. And if you move rightwise, you're moving in the direction of what is right. And righteous doesn't mean to do this or do that. What it means is to get on the right road and get your head headed in the right direction. That's what it means. Righteousness is being right-headed, and it ought to be translated that way in my opinion, because the word righteous is now hacked, and it's just one of those words that pop in the brain like a balloon and leave a pleasant sound, and everybody feels good, but nobody stops to really consider what it is. Well, that's what it is. It's right-headedness. And if you're right-headed, you'll make progress. But if you don't even know what that means, you just wander about thinking you're doing the right thing and you're not. Because the right thing, according to us that we've observed through the centuries, according to the evidence, what is right is a course of process. We call that due process. That's our common law. Now we get to the Declaration of 76. Keeping Hector in mind, Hector was right-headed even though he made a lot of mistakes. Paragraph 15 of our Declaration of 76 cites this right-headedness, and that's what we come to now. It says, paragraph 15, he, that is King George III, this is a common law complaint, he has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution. Our Constitution with a small c. Well, the Constitution wouldn't be ratified for another 14 years or so, or no, see, more like at least a dozen years. What Constitution is he talking about? Well, let's continue here. King George, has subjected us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws. What laws? Well, law is in contrast, even in our courts yesterday, law is our courts yet today. Law is in contrast to equity. It's distinct and distinguished from equity. Law, that's shorthand for common law. It is combined with others, that means criminal conspiracy. What is a conspiracy? Conspiracy is not a theory. Conspiracy is a crime in America. What is it? Well, it's not what the courts say it is. They've left the truth on that one. They're no longer right-headed. They've taken a frolic on a byway, and it's gotten us in a lot of trouble. They're no longer on the path. Conspiracy only has two elements. It's easy to prove if it is present. Conspiracy is an agreement to commit a crime. That's all it is. You prove an agreement to commit a crime and one overt act in furtherance of that agreement, you got conspiracy. People are convicted of conspiracy a lot. It's the, as Justice Jackson said, it's the darling. Conspiracy is the darling of the prosecutor's nursery. He loves it. Why? Because it's easy to prove. But that's what King George is doing here. Combining with others, that means criminal conspiracy, an agreement to commit a crime, to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution. Well, what was their Constitution back then? It is the same Constitution we have today. It is our common law. And our Constitution, that we call our United States Constitution, is a brief of common law government. So things haven't changed any. It's still our Constitution. The only difference is, in England, they call it their unwritten Constitution. And that's what it is to them. They have a Constitution. Their Constitution is their common law. And by the way, our Constitution is still our common law because our common law is what is, well, it's just part of who we are. It's constituted. That means it stands firm together. Con with statution, sta means to stand, like understanding. This is con standing. Understanding is to stand under. Or con standing is to stand with. That's what we agree upon. Magna Carta. What was Magna Carta? It was an agreement between the crown and the landholders of England as to what was right and what was wrong. What is the common law? What are the common law? What's the course of process here? What's due process? Well, that's what they're saying here. So he has conspired and combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution. I got to thinking today, did I talk about this last time? And then I said, well, I don't remember. But if I did, it doesn't hurt to say it again because it's never said. It needs to be said. It ought to be said. It would do us great good if it were stressed. What he's talking about here, the Americans, us, really. What they're talking about here is the Quebec Act. And I know I talked about the Quebec Act someplace here last week, but I couldn't remember where. But if I talked about it before, just bear with me and we'll have a little review. I might say something different about it, something I hadn't said before. The Quebec Act said this, Parliament passed it. It was an attempt to wipe the common law out of the colonies and wipe it out of the Western Territories. They knew that west of the Alleghenies, the men were already pouring in. Boonesboro had already been in the plans. Boone, Daniel Boone, had opened up the Cumberland Gap, or he found his way through. That's what he did. You know, there's mountains along there, hundreds of miles long. They run north to south, and people were trying to find a gap in them. They finally found one where they could wander through and pour into the field of blood. That's what Kentucky means, field of blood, because nobody claimed it. The red men, it was a great hunting ground, but they were fighting over it. And any white men that came in there, they would kill them. And they killed thousands upon thousands of immigrants into the what became the state of Kentucky. Well, the government of England knew that. They knew it was opening up. They knew they were going to stop the flood. And they knew that they let the common law be the law of those western lands, that they wouldn't have control. That's right. So here's what they did. And they knew the Ohio Valley was the plum they were after, and that stretched clear from the Mississippi River clear to the Alleghenies. Took in the Cumberland River, the Tennessee River, the Ohio River, the Wabash River, and all the other little rivers that flowed into them, the White River, the Green River, all those. So what they did was this. They said, we got to get the law of the city in there. How can we do it? Well, we'd fought a terrible war. The colony, or the people of the Americas, carried the brunt of it at the Plains of Abraham. I remember talking about this, and that's where the battle was fought that changed the destiny of North America. It would either have been France and the law of the city, the Code of Justinian, the Code Napoleon, as they called it, or it would have ended the French tongue, different, as one fellow said, different culture, different people, different tongue, different religion. It would all have been different here. But the French didn't win. They got whooped terminally. The general of the English army died in the battle. A lot of Americans took part. George Washington was involved in those campaigns as a young officer. And by doing so, the common law was established throughout Canada. Before that, the French had great influence. Yeah, I remember talking about this, but what they said was that all of the territory they were going to extend, they said, we're changing, we're letting Quebec, all those Frenchmen that live in Quebec, they want their law of the city back. They don't like our common law, so we're going to give it to them. And they did, by act of parliament. You can have the canon law of the Church of Rome as your law. And they were all Roman Catholics, so that fit well. They liked that. But then parliament went ahead and annexed all of what is now Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan, into Quebec and extended Quebec clear up above the Great Lakes, clear around over to Newfoundland, and made all of Canada and all of the Western territories Quebec. It's hard to believe. Well, that's why they say here, let me read this again, and it'll all fit. That's the rest of the story. That's why they say here, he has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution. That's the Quebec Act. And unacknowledged by our laws. That's our common law. And then he says later, let's see if I get this in the next paragraph. Where is that? I remember. Well, he says, "With the idea was he wanted to extend, and they say this, extend that law into these colonies. So they were going to extend it throughout what is now the Midwest, Quebec, and then a neighboring province," it says in the declaration here. And through that neighboring province called Quebec, which they extended clear down to the Ohio River, you're going to take away our common law terminally, and we're willing to go to war over that. And friends, neighbors, and kin, that's why we went to war. Fundamentally, above all things, we went to war, not because of taxes. That was what was pumped up as the reason, just like slavery was pumped up as the reason that during the war between the states. But what happened here was they pumped up the idea of taxation. That wasn't it. It was the attempt to supplant the law of the land, called the common law, those are synonyms, with the law of the city, because under the law of the city, George wouldn't have been king, George III. He said he was. He was emperor here, and that means his decrees ruled. He is the law. And the jury doesn't have any authority anymore. The jury still doesn't have any authority in Quebec and Louisiana, where people from Quebec went. The threat to America is still the same. It has never changed. It is the law of the city. That's our greatest threat. That's always been our greatest threat. That's always been. That tells the story of mankind since the founding of the city of Babylon and the development there under Nimrod, the first true emperor of the world, the development of the law of the city. A one-man show, a one-will show. And there is now, we face now in America, the same fundamental problem that our forebears faced when they wrote the Declaration of 76. And the details of it in likeness are utterly uncanny. What do we face today? Well, we face Sharia law. Well, what's that? That's the law of the city, just another label. Fundamentally the same thing. We face Talmudic law. What's that? Well, that's just the law of the city. As all Talmudists have said in the past, the Talmud and the Mishnah are scholasticism. Well, what is scholasticism? That's St. Thomas Aquinas. Well, where did he get it? Well, he got it from Mohammedes, the Islamic sage from North Africa. He gave it. He got it. He gave it to St. Thomas Aquinas. Aquinas gave it to Mohammedes. And all three of them together at the same time, contemporaries, they foisted that whole ugly support of that law of the city system upon Europe in a way that had never been pushed before. And the intellectual foundation of it is reason, logic, scholasticism. That's what we face today. It comes at us in such insidious ways. What was I reading the other day? Oh, I read a book. Oh, I know who it was. I was reading G.K. Chesterton. My daughter gave me a book somebody had sent to her by G.K. Chesterton. G.K. Chesterton was an Australian intellectual back in the 1930s. And I'd quoted him before. He does say some smart things. He was no dummy. He was a curator of a museum. He got to be real famous. He'd write essays. He was an essayist. But when you read his essays, and I put the book down and I told my daughter, just take it. I don't want to read that baloney. You get tired of people just constant logic and reasoning, and it doesn't get them anywhere. And then I looked at it and I said, but where's the facts? Does this guy ever deal with the facts? No, he concludes facts. He doesn't start with facts. He just reasons. That's what the law of the city is. That's not what our common law is about. That's not what the Bible is about. That's not what the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God unwritten, the laws of nature unwritten in creation, the laws of nature's God written in the Bible, as Blackstone says to us. That's our fundamental law. It's not about logic, fundamentally. No, it's about facts. And men will naturally, if men have the facts, if the jury has the facts, you won't have to teach them logic. They don't have to take a course in logic. Nobody has to take a course in logic. When your neck is in the noose, when you really want to make a decision, when your life, your liberty, or your property, or a combination of those is on the block, your logic will be impeccably sure. You'll figure it out. Why? Because that's what men are made to do. That's how God made men. And that's how we're different than the critters. Logic is what we do. Horses run, birds fly, beasts of prey are born to ferocity, birds fly, hounds hunt. You can't stop a hound from hunting. You can beat him half to death, beat a mud hole in him, turn around, beat it dry. He'd still get up and go hunt whatever he's by nature prone to hunt, rabbits, coons, whatever it is, birds, quail, pheasant. That's what hounds do. Bloodhounds, their noses smell. They can't stop smelling. Men are born to think, and they do, and you can't stop them. I know they're lazy. I know they don't give a hoot half the time or more, but when they want to, they will. And teaching it doesn't make men smart. What makes men smart? When they're informed of the facts and they put it together. Informed of the facts and they put it together. How do you put it together? Well, you relate the particulars to the universals. Yeah, when you do that, then it all falls in place, and men do that naturally. Well, that's what I saw with G.K. Chesterton. He was all up in his head. People thought he was a great intellectual. Well, he was, but who needs him? Give me a man that'll just tell me the blasted truth, dadgummit. Cut all the baloney. Ever read St. Thomas Aquinas? I've read hundreds of pages of St. Thomas Aquinas. I guess just to say I did, what did it gain me? A lot of wasted time, of much books, said Solomon, is weariness of the flesh. Unless you read the right books. And there are a few that are worth reading and pondering over and poring over and not stopping poring over. Declaration 76, I believe, is one of those. It is their observations. It's not the Bible, but it is the laws of nature, unwritten in the nature of things, meant to be observed. The Constitution that this paragraph 15 of our Declaration of 76 references is England's common law. As I just said, that is their Constitution, and that was our Constitution, and it remains our Constitution. You can't understand the Constitution of the United States. It's meaningless without our common law. It explains nothing. It's just a brief. It throws out the words and phrases and cites them with full confidence that Americans were versed in such things, lived in a common law country. When it said jury, people said, oh, I know all about the jury. I served on the jury once. You got to choose a jury before the trial. You can't choose it the week before or the day before. It doesn't work. There are 12 people on the jury, 12 men on the jury. The jury means that the ones that are sworn, they knew all that. Do we know that today? Do we know what a grand jury is today? That's our common law. Is it taught in law school? Answer, no. The grand jury and what it is not taught in law school. What's taught in law school? What's taught in law school is what the law firms that have lots of money want them to teach, because they tell the law schools what kind of folk they want, and they donate the money to the law schools a lot of times, yes, even the government schools. So they dictate really what's being taught, and if it doesn't make money, it's not taught. The grand jury doesn't make anybody any money. Isn't that funny? Funny. Of course, lawyers practice law to make money, I know, but it gets out of hand at some point. Everybody's got to eat. I understand that. And lawyers like to make money. I understand that. But whatever happened to being committed to something higher than yourself and your own security? Does life really have any meaning if you're not committed to something greater than yourself? And the answer is no, it doesn't. It doesn't. My father taught me that. He said, he put it this way, this is a little nicer way to put it. He said, Brent, the higher your loyalty in the hierarchy of this world, the happier you're going to be. The higher you place your loyalty in the hierarchy of this created world, the happier you're going to be. So if a man is a military man, he places his loyalty in the old man, the captain, the commanding officer. No, not to anybody below him, but to him. He'll be happier. If you work for a company, you know what the president of the company wants. If your loyalty is ultimately to him, you'll be happier. But it stands also true that if you're in a family and you're committed not to your brothers and sisters, but committed to the welfare of your, or not the welfare, the authority of your parents, and especially the father, he's the one that's often left and left out, you'll be happier, because that's what God, that's the way God designed it, and that's the way God has made you. But to carry it further, if you're committed, absolutely committed, to the very top, the person who is the final arbiter of right and wrong, the creator of heaven and earth and all that in them is, you'll be happier. Oh, no question. David said, I have set the Lord. He's the lawgiver, by the way. We're talking about law here. I have set the Lord always before me. Therefore, here's the result. Therefore, my heart is glad. And I didn't set my teachers always before me. I didn't set anybody else before me that was under him. It was him that keeps my focus and my perspective. He's the lens through which I view the entire universe. Everything that happens to me, I see it through the lens of who he is. Who is he? He is the lawgiver. His will governs everything. The will of the sovereign is law. Well, by displacing the common law with the law foreign, I'm quoting the Declaration, foreign to our Constitution, King George and his cronies did away with common law freedoms. Well, that's what they were trying to do. And paragraph 15 also accuses George III, as we'd said, of conspiracy. Conspire, that means to breathe together. Con, together. Spirate, that means to breathe. These are Latin words. I wish we'd get rid of them, but we got them. Conspiracy, agreement. Breathing together, talking together to commit a crime. An agreement to commit a crime proven by action aimed at completing the crime. Accordingly, our Declaration of 76 here shifts from the lone pronoun he, that's referring to King George, to this phrase, he has combined with others. And he, throughout the rest of the Declaration of 76, that's what it says, he has combined with others. Well, who are those others? Well, I was talking to a fellow recently. Where was he from? Oh, from, what, Ireland? It was, that was England. He was from England. But we got to talking about this situation. And I said to him, you know what really puzzles me? He said, what's that? I said, the British East India Company's flag, that was their flag for centuries, is our United States flag. I said, that puzzles me. He said, well, have you looked into it? I said, yes, I've looked into it. I've read books on the subject. And the East India Company flag, which was the trading arm of the Bank of London. I said, why? How did that happen? I think Betsy Ross may have been the first one to sew it together, but she wasn't the one that designed it. Now, you can go to the Internet, look it up, the East India Company flag. And he was telling me he had a neighbor that used to fly the East India Company flag in England, where he lived up. I think it was up by Yorkshire someplace. He used to fly it. And it looked, he said, he saw it and he said, well, why are you flying the American flag? He said, that's not the American flag. That's the flag of the East India Company, the British East India Company. It had variations through the centuries, but fundamentally it was the same. Well, what I'm saying is this. I'm saying I don't know how that happened. But the only thing I can figure is, and there have been people written books on the subject trying to plumb the depths of how that happened, and I haven't found anybody that knows. But it's almost as though the United States was sticking it in their face, and saying, we're not going to trade with your East India Company. And that's who George was conspiring with, you see. George III and many members of Parliament were heavily invested in the East India Company. And they told the colonies, because they had control of Parliament also, they told the colonies, they said, you can't trade with anybody but the East India Company. Well, the colonies said, wait a minute, that's not freedom, that's monopoly. That's a monopoly. Well, monopolies are always in place because of force and violence. And Parliament controlled the Army and the Navy of England, powerful bunch, armed forces. And the Army and the Navy were the enforcers of the East India Company. So the East India Company at any given point, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, had at least 24 to 2,500 ships on the high seas at any given moment, 24 hours a day. That's a lot of ships. And the British Navy was tasked, that's why it was so powerful at that time, because it was tasked with protecting all those ships. And that was their focus, protecting that trade. And doing away with anybody else that competed with them, by the way. And their biggest competition was the Dutch East India Company, which had just as many ships and had a navy to protect them. Well, George III was heavily invested in the Bank of London. The Bank of London, trading arm of the Bank of London, the main one, was the British East India Company. So all of this had a lot of personal pound of flesh mixed up in it. George III was combining with others. Now, is that applicable today? Do we see that happening today? Do we see politicians combining with others in business? It's against the law, but do we see Harry Reid combining with the Chinese to take ranch land away from people in Nevada? Yes, he's done it. Senator Harry Reid. Do we see Bill Clinton combining with others to give a large naval installation in Long Beach, California. I've been to it. I remember when it was a large shipyard, largest one on the West Coast, that Bremerton. Nothing there but tens and tens and tens of thousands of American sailors. And now all that stuff has been razed down flat. None of the buildings are there anymore. There are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of seagoing containers piled up in that part of the world now. Nothing but flatter and a flitter and docks where China owns the docks there. Well, was President Clinton, was he combining with others to commit crimes against Americans? Of course he was. What about the Panama Canal? Giving it away. Did any politicians, Jimmy Carter, anybody combine with others to give that away? Well, sure they did. On and on it goes. Some stuff. This is just things that we know about a little bit. And who knows what's going on behind the scenes? Things don't change. What's the answer? Well, we're going to read through this and see if we can pick a few things up. I've taken up almost all my time here. Let me read a couple other things. So the pronoun shift at this paragraph 15, from he to he has combined with others, and that's the way it continues. The culprits of paragraphs 15 through 24, where it says he is combined with others, are the co-conspirators. And paragraph 24 calls this cartel, them declaring themselves invested with the power to legislate. Them who have declared themselves invested with the power to legislate. In fact, every abuse that paragraphs 15 through 24 of our Declaration of 76 cites is one of the goals of King George III's having combined with others by giving his assent to their pretended legislation. That's how it starts, by giving consent to pretended legislation. Do we have pretended legislation? America, yes, that's how it starts. We have lots of it. Well, what's pretended legislation? Well, let's start with bureaucratic regulations. How many of those we got? Tens, 20, hundreds, millions of pages of bureaucratic legislation. Those are pretended legislation. Yeah, they're not law. But it's what the bureaucrats say, how they interpret the law. That's their opinion. And we've got, of course, 5,500 federal statutes that are without any authority. That's pretended legislation. It's not law at all. There's nothing in the Constitution of the United States that bequeaths authority to pass legislation concerning, for example, marijuana. There's nothing in there that bequeaths the power of the federal government even, now watch me close on this, even to regulate, of all things, firearms in any way. It's not to be infringed. As a matter of fact, that's expressly said, is not allowed to the federal government. All those such things, all the background checks, all that, that's pretended legislation. That's the kind of things that our Declaration of 76 complains. Well, as does Federal Reserve Bank employees in our own day. England's Central Bank of London enjoyed monopolies on issuing currency, monopolies on trade through the British East India Company, and receipt of tax revenues, issuance of money, I mentioned that. And they do all this to service their loans and further to fund reinforcement of such taxation, all contrary to the English Constitution's common law rights against such monopolies. Is there a money-issuing monopoly in America? Yes, it's against our Constitution. Did the Constitution grant anybody the power under the force and violence of the federal government to have a monopoly on issuing currency? The answer is no, they don't. Congress has the power to print money, but it doesn't say that there's a monopoly allowed there. Does anybody, can we find anywhere in the Constitution where it says that the U.S. Postal Service is to have a monopoly on carrying letters? No, just says they're supposed to provide post offices and post roads. Privately, other people can do that, but certainly, even if they do it, they choose to carry mail, which the Constitution doesn't give them authority to do. But without question, the government has no right to declare it a crime for anybody else to carry letters for pay, and they do. It's against the law. That's a monopoly, friends, neighbors, and kin. And things haven't changed. Fundamentally, that's all I'm driving at. So we come here. No, we're not going to make it to 16, so I'll stop there and hope I remember where I left off. I'll try to put a little mark there. But that's all I have this evening, John. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Brent. Okay, we're going to move over to questions. Again, we only got a few people in the queue, so if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6, we'll take our next caller. And it is, we lost someone from Utah. I don't know how that happened, but next person is calling in, 415 area code. What's your first name and your state?
Hello, it's Jeremiah here. How you doing, Brent? Brent Winters, it's Jeremiah Guthrie here. How you doing, everybody?
Okay. How you doing, Jeremiah? In a car, I can hear traffic or something.
It's a little noisy here. I apologize for the noise. I wasn't expecting you to be muted me right now. But, okay, so here's my question, you guys. This question is directed to, by the way, Gerard, I mean, our brother, not Gerard, Brent Winters, you were excellent just now. What you were talking about regarding the common law and the differences between the civil law and the common law, it literally, your expertise, it goes so deep, it's hard to fathom. It's hard to understand it from people that just scratch the surface. If you've got some history doing research, you know that the things that you're talking about this are just, they're just staples. They're part of the common law, you know. And so, but as you know, in America, Brent, we have like this mishmash of common law and civil law, and there seems to be a bit of a blur, if you will, as it respects the common law, because, you know, it's been kind of a battle between which one is going to be the most popular or dominant law in the world. Whether is it going to be the law of the city, or is it going to be the common law, which ultimately in this country, America, as far as I know, reflects back and becomes basically the rules of court. So the rules of court are different than statutes and codes. That's my first question. Is that right?
Not entirely. But I wouldn't chide anybody for saying that because the legal experts say that. But that's not really true at all. No, it isn't.
Okay.
So do you want me to go ahead and respond to that, or did you want to talk to me?
Well, you can't. I get where you're going. I think ultimately that, like, it depends on what that court is, right? Which court is it where those rules are derived from is going to determine what the common law is, right?
Well, no, the common law is, period. Whether we find it or not is another question. And in common law countries, we don't decree law. We don't declare law. We find it. And that's as ancient as the pre-Christian tribes that came to Britain. They, in their godless pagan state, when they were interested only in deep drinking and high-handed gaming, they had this religion where they believed, and this is why it worked so well when they received the Christian writings, the scriptures, because they believed deep down inside that none of them, that the law didn't come from the human mind. They believed they had to find it, its application, with every legal problem that arose, and they would look for it, and then they would call it their opinion. And that is why today, only in common law countries such as ours, what our courts say, we call that opinions. And what the jury says, we call that the findings of the jury. That is lost in thousands of years going back into the ancient fog of antiquity, and we still have that point of view. And that one simple, fundamental, first principle is what controls everything that we are, and it is our identity as a common law people to say that the law is eternal. We don't manufacture it. We find it. It's out there. Why do we say it's eternal? Well, we say it's eternal because God is eternal. In what way is God eternal? That means that his mind is eternal. His thoughts are eternal. He never changes, as it says in Hebrews chapter 13. Same yesterday, today, and forever.
Right.
Well, if he never changes, his will never changes. And if his will never changes, his law never changes. And it's our job to find. It's not, we're just mortals. We don't know everything, but he knows everything. There never was a time that he did not know all that could be known. He has never been taught, and he will never learn. That's
okay.
The Godhead.
And what you're explaining, brother, I'm sorry,
no,
you are going on it.
You're a verbal fella, and I can tell you're chafing at the bit, so I got to let you talk.
You're going on and on, and I understand what you're saying, and I definitely want to get in the conversation with you because it's kind of an important one because it delves into the arena of individualism and where that lies in this whole city, law of the city thing. Where do we as individuals rest in if we exist within the city? You know, common law is based on individualism, right? So, okay.
No, it's based upon the individual judgment of each man directly responsible to his maker. That's what the jury is all about. It's not about a majority institution and majority rules. Neither is the grand jury about a majority. It's always 12 with the grand jury. It's all about every man knowing that in the final day, he will answer to his maker by himself for what he did or didn't do or say or didn't say, and his maker will not allow him to say The government told me to do it. The preacher told me to do it. The Pope told me to do it. The Pope told me it was okay. The Supreme Court said it was okay. My dad said it was okay. My professor said
exactly.
It was okay. None of that
yeah.
will wash when you stand before your maker. So, and the reason that's important is because that should encourage us to try now to learn to keep and to do the true law. The law of American, fundamental, Declaration of 76, comes in two volumes. To quote the Declaration, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. William Blackstone tells us in his first volume of his commentaries on the laws of England, some people call it the commentaries on the common law, it kind of is, but he says that phrase is well known. It came out of the Scottish Enlightenment. It was an expression, and he wrote what he wrote about 1765, and he said it means the two volumes are fundamental law as Englishmen. Our common law, the laws of nature, unwritten in the nature of things, unwritten, to be meant to be found, to be found and discovered in each individual instances. That's the job of the courts, the jury. And then the second volume is the laws of nature's God written in the Bible. That is our fundamental law by our organic document, the Declaration of 76. That's exactly what that phrase means. You won't hear it said other way at other places. Why? Because it's not politically correct. It's ugly to talk about religion as though it is exclusive, that the Bible is part of our law, but who are we kidding?
The Bible
formed the basis for our country,
right.
And the people that founded our country, they wouldn't even allow legislation. They said, we got legislation right here in the Bible. Go back and read the court records and the opinions delivered in New England in those days. Yeah. And you say, well, I don't like that. Well, it doesn't make a difference whether you like it or not. It's the truth, and it has enabled us with our
mindset. I like it.
Looking at that enabled us to be the most powerful engine of wealth and prosperity that Adam's race has ever known. If you don't like
Absolutely.
It, that's okay. But even people like Tom Paine, who hated the Bible and hated God and said so, he knew when he wrote his pamphlet nobody would listen to him unless he took it all out of the Bible, and he did. Common sense is a proof from the Bible of why we don't need a king. So I just say that as a matter of fact. You say, Brent's preaching. No, I'm not preaching.
No, you're not. No.
I'm just given the facts of history. People can take them or leave them. I've decided what I'm going to do through long experience and hard study. Other people can decide what they want to do.
You don't have to explain anything.
We're all going to answer for our decision. Go ahead, Jeremiah.
You don't have to explain, Brent, because you do a lot of explaining. You know, and you do it on a daily basis, I'm sure, for free for a lot of people that should be paying you. And I just want to say that by mention, you just opened up my mind to how common law, by using the principles of in the Bible, the idea of God, it's an individual thing. It respects individual sovereignty. And that's exactly where common law rests at. If you even think about the differences between civil law and common law, the civil law countries, especially with equity courts, right, they're dealing more with like how it's going to affect the greater body politic and things of that nature. But then with this individualism, you have this direct responsibility aspect of it.
I don't think that's true, though.
That's fine. That's my opinion, though. But go ahead if you want to comment. I have another question.
Yeah,
Laura is really very simple. Okay, everybody knows when someone is wronged. I mean, the law that we're concerned about, which is the common law we're concerned about, really gets to where criminal charges might be brought up against somebody, where you injured somebody. And they're in it, of course, is the grand jury. They look at the situation and they say, yeah, there's a crime here. Or, yeah, someone has been injured, and we need to fix this problem. So if we can't fix it, which they do have the right to try to fix it without going into the court, but if they can't fix it, well, let's send it into the jury and let the jury figure it out and decide what needs to be done. Of course, this isn't the way things are working today, but this is the way it should be working. But everybody knows just by listening to the story, listening to the witnesses, what's going on, who did the wrong, the fact that something was wrong or not, and what needs to be done to try to repair the individual. And that's what common law is really all about. Now, you know, we do have equity, and, you know, equity law still runs under the common law. It's supposed to be a, you know, common law rule, so to speak. But the key thing about equity law, in my opinion, from what I understand, is it's all about a contract now. I have a disagreement with an individual, and we take it into the court, and we could decide to have a jury to decide on this if it's over $20, but we can also allow a judge to make a decision on this, and then there's an appellate system through that. You can appeal the decisions. And,
right.
And if we have honest people, right. just people that are judges, then we can get good results from that. But when these people are not very, very nice people, you know, they don't make their decisions mm-hmm. on what's right and wrong. They usually have some kind of a connection to the case if they play around with the case. But an equity case is really, you know, usually a contract type thing, a disagreement thing.
John, I've read that equity.
But let me finish and then you could talk.
Go ahead.
Now, so the third part of this whole thing, of course, is we have a constitution, okay? And the constitution mm-hmm. lays out ultimately what authority we've given to Congress to make law and what that law is for. So, you know, you go into Article 1, Section 8, I believe it is, Section 8, and you could say, well, okay, the Congress has the power to write the law concerning this issue, that issue, and the other issue. But it's all about governing, okay? You see, the Constitution is really just focused in on governing, how the governing works, what authority, how far they can go, what jurisdiction, who has what, and that's it. So, but it is pretty simple if you really think about it. You know, when they bring out all of the civil law, all of these statutes trying to control our behavior and everything, that's where it becomes a problem. And that's where our courts have ended up today. We need to deal with that problem and get rid of it.
Hey, you open up a can of worms, or why don't you? Okay, because I got a lot. You just mentioned a lot of things I could talk about. Let's just do this for everyone that's listening. I want to ask you my second question, so we can move a little more forward.
Hold on, Jeremiah. When you ask your second question, we're going to move from you to the next call. There's only one other person in the call. You can get back in again if you want.
Please don't mute me immediately so that way I can have a chance to respond if anyone wants to talk directly to me.
On that mute button
okay,
right now.
Here it is. you're funny. Hello, everyone, by the way. I wish you all well. Here's the thing. My question is, the letters that you're writing regarding injustices or possibly breaches of fiduciary duty by Supreme Court justices of the United States, Are those letters directly addressing what is this thing called, advisory opinions? Because, in other words, in essence, what I'm saying is, by writing a complaint, you're trying to get into the Supreme Court for a specific issue, right, Brent? Or Gerard, or anyone that's listening, if you're trying to get into the Supreme Court for one specific issue, you have to make sure that it's not an advisory opinion, because there could be adequate and independent state grounds. And my question is, here's my question. I don't want to debate whether what I just said was true or not, because I already know it is. But the issue is, what letters have you written and to the Supreme Court, what complaints have you made to the Supreme Court of the United States that would ordinarily be and regularly be advisory opinions, and this is why we're probably not going
to
get into the Supreme Court.
Are you talking to me about this?
I'm talking to you, I'm talking to Brent, I'm talking to everyone. I'm asking you a question. I'm saying, hold on, John, let me finish my question, if you don't mind, to make sure that you guys understand it. Advisory opinions will never get heard by the Supreme Court. You will not get your issue in front of the Supreme Court if there's adequate and independent state grounds. So my question is, here's my question. John, how many letters or complaints have you written to the state Supreme Courts in all the different states where these issues are? Let's say there's a huge issue in, you know, that's happening in all the different states simultaneously. Have you guys written independent letters, different letters? Or is it just one letter to the Supreme Court, or is it different letters to all the Supreme Courts of the different states? That's my question.
All right, look, your perception, it tells me that you were on two different, two different pages here. Well, let me tell you why, okay?
Go ahead, I'm listening.
Complaints. I don't make complaints. Matter of fact, I just had a response.
Let's not get hung up on the words.
Hold on. Yeah. No, we have to get hung up on words. I do actions at law, okay? That's common law. An action at law is common law. A complaint is you're complaining about someone and you go
to
a decision. And, but
please answer the question.
I'm trying to answer
the question. Please answer the question. All right. Thank you.
All right. I'm going to have to mute you if you don't let me talk then. Okay. We don't make complaints to begin with. We make declarations ultimately. Look at our gun lawsuit that we have going here. It's an action at law. Okay. These people have broken the law. We've made it clear on the paper they've broken the law. We showed them where they don't have the power or the authority to make or do these things, and we're not going to allow them to make a decision. You know, I just wrote a writ of error today to a judge, and he called it, this a complaint, and I corrected him on that, okay, that this is not a complaint. This is an action at law. This is to proceed under the common law. You don't have the power or the authority to make any kind of summary judgments. Okay, this is going into the jury, and we have in this case is a personal situation. It's not anything like going up against the state or anything, but it is a contract dispute, and it is going before a jury and not a judge, and it's well over $20. But in any event, as far as the papers and the cases that we write, okay. We really, most of our writing to judges and to whether it be the federal courts, the Supreme Court, and even the United States Supreme Court, it's making them aware of the criminal actions that these courts are committing. And we want it to stop, to cease and desist. And that is what we've been doing for a long time. So it's an action at law. We're trying to get someplace with it, but we're not asking any of those people to make any decisions. Mm-hmm. You got to remember, and this is very important, people, I think they've lost their minds. Okay, I almost went down that road of losing my mind. I couldn't care less what any federal court decision makes. They don't write the law. They don't make the conclusions of law. They don't interpret the law. They call that's what they try to tell me, that's common law when I talk to a lawyer. Oh, yeah, that's common law. No, it's irrelevant. I never quote federal district court decisions or anything. That's totally irrelevant. I use the United States Supreme Court decisions when it builds principles. Not on the decision to try to build a position against something else, but only to build the principles, the common law principles that they do come out with often inside their court cases. And we use those because those common law principles, these courts should be listening to their boss, which is the Supreme Court, United States Supreme Court. So when you go into these federal courts, they should be listening to what their boss has to say. If they want to go this way and their boss says this is the way to go, we'll use their boss's words against them, and that's how we try to use it. And they'll try to ignore it and get around it. And, of course, we support it with a lot more than that, okay? We support it, of course, with principles, and we support it with common other, you know, founding documents, founding fathers' quotes and different things of that nature. But
my question didn't get answered. My question didn't get answered because I'm asking you if you wrote. No, I'm asking you if you wrote to any Supreme Court of any state. That's what I'm asking.
We have.
Did you write to any Supreme Court?
You're not listening. We have not.
Go ahead.
We have notified every single judge in this nation on the state and federal level of the crimes and the RICO that's going on in their courts, and it needs to stop. You need to read our papers.
All right, thank you, John, man. I appreciate
filing,
it. Yeah.
We're not filing a complaint with anyone. We are coming in with an action at law. We have an intention of doing something about it. We can't do it right now because they got the guns. But it's coming up very soon. We, the people, are going to get these guns, and then we're going to deal with them. And they're all going to have to then deal with the crimes that they've committed. But we've already put it on paper. The very first paper we wrote was Coahuanto, okay? And if you understand the process of the Coahuanto, we put them on notice, okay?
By what authority, right, yeah, exactly.
Shut down, but we can't do anything about it right now because we don't have the muscle, the power, the authority. But it's coming, and it's up to the people to decide to do this. You know, our ranks are building up little by little, okay? We have a lot of people that you know about us, and they listen in here or there, and maybe come onto our website and maybe don't become members. So we have a lot of people who visit our website, but... We have a decent membership.
But John,
building up.
I don't.
Hold on.
It's cool.
Hold
it's
on.
Cool. No. It's cool.
But this cool. is good for everyone to hear anyway. So, but you see, it's more than what you're saying. A complaint. There is no complaints here. We're not complaining about anything. We're telling these people what they're doing wrong and what they need to do to stop
right.
it. And we're telling them to do the right thing, and we'll be merciful to those people. We let it know. Look, we've talked to them from the perspective of the grand jury. okay? And I know that they understand that. There is a fear that we may get that power and authority, and that's why they don't know what to do with us. And they're afraid to deal with us. And you know, they send the FBI, they send all these federal agencies, and they walk away, you know, without a problem. Because all the low-level people, you know, they come in, they're looking at the situation, and they don't see anything wrong. And they also see what we're talking about, and we're not doing anything stupid or crazy, you know. But again, okay, we're not in the courts to file a complaint. We're not in the courts to win anything. Well, we are now. We want to take court cases against certain situations. We do want to go after the judiciary in an action at law that really has some, they're going to have to deal with, making restitution.
Okay. But my question is, which judiciary, state or national?
Hold on.
State or national?
I'm just going to finalize it. That is where the Coahuanto comes in. That's why we did the Coahuanto first, because when we have the power and the authority and the backing, whether it be, you know, critical mass, whether it be the president making a note and supporting us, or Jeff Sessions sending us down U.S. attorneys, at that point in time, that's when things are going to happen on our side. And we'll just wait for it. We have faith and trust it's going to happen. Now, what was the last question?
Well, I just want to see if Brent has any response, and I yield the mic after that.
I don't think I could think you were driving at when you're talking about advisory opinions.
Well, thanks, Sean.
This is important to say. It's because of our common law. Our Constitution repeats this common law principle. It's been true for centuries before our Constitution that our common law courts will not hear any case that just calls for an advisory opinion. In other words, there must be, as lawyers say, there must be a bloody plaintiff. There must be somebody really injured. There must be people fighting over life, liberty, property, money, something. A concrete case. Just, you can't go into court and say, I wonder what the court would say about this. A hypothetical jurisdiction, for example.
Usually opinions has to do with trying to get the court's opinion on the law, and that's the last thing we want to do is ask any judge what their opinion is on the law.
Matter of fact,
we have the power of nullification, period.
Yeah, that's true. And the courts don't have jurisdiction in America. No court has jurisdiction to pass judgment on anything but real facts, real cases where there's a real alleged injury. So that's important. When you write a complaint, you got to allege an injury, and you better always allege money damages, because that's concrete. The courts don't have any trouble with that. Oh, you're alleging you lost $50,000, $100,000 in time and money, and your leg's mangled, or whatever it is, you got to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to say it in concrete ways. And it has to be recognizable or cognizable, as they say, in terms of money. You can't even get into federal court and you allege at least $100,000 now. It changes the path of inflation. I can't keep up with it.
Yeah, well, the federal court, I think, is $75,000.
Well, Brent,
okay.
I mean,
the federal court.
Yeah, that's the rules.
Look at Jeremiah. There's only one other person in the queue. I'm going to take the next person.
I still want to have an answer from you, though, about this, okay?
We still haven't really answered the question. I gave you an answer.
Well, I mean, I want to know, what I'm saying is the people on National Liberty Alliance call and all these members, they have a right to expect, you know, something that's going to happen that actually has a huge effect to advance forward the common law perspective of this group. And so that's why I was wondering if you have been writing directly to the court individually in all the states, or is it just one, you know, you're writing to the Supreme Court Justice for the United States and expecting him to inform everyone else?
No. You need to go back and read our papers. You don't understand what we're doing then. And if you read our papers and just, you know, just go from one paper to another. Start at the beginning. Start with the Coahuanto. And remember, our writing has gotten better and better as time has gone on. We've written a lot of papers. And see to who all we've written to. And we have filed this with every single state and federal judge in America. Did I say every single one of them? Yes, I did. Every single one of them. We have put the word out to all of them. All right? Now, again, we started off with the Coahuanto. Okay? And basically, we're about ready to shut them down. Of course, we don't have the power or the authority to shut them down because they've acted outside of their authority and on an extreme way. And you know, they really are motivated by RICO. We have organized crimes in our courtrooms. We have organized crimes in our legislators. We have organized crimes even on your local government. It's organized crime, right down into the committeemen. Organized crime everywhere, okay? And they're all protecting each other. And the day is coming, the moment is coming, the time is coming, when we will either hit that critical mass, have enough people behind us to understand what we're doing, and get the fear of the law into these people and start putting them in jail or making them start pay restitution, start taking their things away and give it back to the people that they took it from. And, you know, this could happen with Jeff Sessions. We understand the pressure that Jeff Sessions is on, and I think I understand what's going on with him. And let me just push off to the next.
Thank you, man.
You can come back in a minute if you want. Because Fred, hang on 1 minute before you talk. I just want to finish this. You know, let's take Jeff Sessions, okay? He knows we want U.S. attorneys to come down and work with the cases that we put into this court right up here in the Northern District of New York. We have some serious crimes that we have alleged upon people. You know, we have written our indictments, and they have to answer to it. It's got to go before a jury.
So,
there's no getting away. I'm going to write some more. Okay, we're also going to make some decisions.
Pick up on the road
and other things. But anyway, okay. Fred, you got the mic.
Jim,
thank you very much. I wanted to ask this question for the last like 3 or 4 weeks, but I've avoided it.
Uh-oh.
And Brent Winters brought it up again tonight, so I cannot let it go. He said that there's very little taught about grand juries when they teach lawyers. Yeah.
I didn't get that, Fred. Try that again.
He said in law school they don't teach them much about grand juries, the lawyers.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, when I read the barons, the 25 barons, I think of a baron as like a governor of a state, like maybe having 20 shires under him, counties, okay? And you got 25 dudes standing up with probably the whole state or a whole army under him. At the minimum, it would be a county, large county. So when we have a National Liberty Alliance and you represent 50 states and 3,300 and whatever counties, what is a proper quorum to consider an indictment? And what is the proper number of people to carry that motion?
Well, look at with what we're doing, you gotta remember, we're doing something that's probably never done before.
I'm
going to answer your question, though. And we're going to use as much common sense as possible, okay? I am thankful, okay, that we've had as many as a couple hundred people and as little as 50 people or 40 people at a consideration of an indictment. And it's generally been almost everybody agrees. I mean, it's like almost all the time. We've had a couple, you know, here or there that have gone a different direction. And I think really a lot of that was maybe a mistake or something. They didn't understand what we were saying on as far as how we were voting. But in any event, it's bare minimum. So where is the number? Okay, well, generally, let's just work off the 25. And as Brent says, you need at least 12. But if we had, because we're doing something on a national level, we're including every state, and that's what really makes us legitimate, we are in every single state. The opportunity of people from every state to come into this meeting to make a decision is there if they fail to do it. You know, as I think it was Franklin that said, you know, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority who participate. And just like Congress or any other group or committee or anything that goes on, as long as you have a quorum, you continue on. Now, we don't really necessarily have what's called a quorum, but again, we look to the numbers. If you have 50, 60 people or 100 people or 40 people, and it's almost unanimous, and it's usually the last one we did was unanimous, But if it's almost unanimous, one or two people dissenting and everyone else going forward, we have something there. And we can't sit around and wait. Besides that, we know what we're doing is right, but we're doing it as lawful as we can. We're trying to go through the processes that we have available to us, the common law processes of the grand jury. And again, you know, what we're doing, what going after is one thing, is our big focus. And even though we do some things on non-judicial foreclosures and we're doing things on habeas corpuses, those are two key points because people are losing their homes, and that proves. These non-judicial foreclosure proves without a shadow of a doubt the relationship between the courts and the mortgage companies and the lawyers and also these towns for taking the tax, for taking properties away from tax. It proves collusion. It proves conspiracy. And they're all breaking the same law with the same processes that are all unlawful, illegal, and violates our unalienable right of due process and courts of justice. And in every single case of these mortgage foreclosures, in every single case of these tax foreclosures, the reason why they do the non-judicial foreclosure is because no judge wants to put his hand, John Hancock, on that case because it is a crime. They do not have the power or the authority or the ability, the contract. They can't prove anything that anybody owes anybody anything. And you see, so that's why they have the non-judicial foreclosures. Now, we go after those cases for two reasons. The main reason is to prove the conspiracy and RICO. That's the main reason. But also, we're trying to help people get their homes back or prevent people from losing their homes and have the opportunity to have something filed that they're going to get their homes back someday, maybe, you know. Our purpose is laid out from the very beginning in the Cor Wanto. We said it exactly what it is that we're after. There are problems in our government, and there are enemies, both foreign and domestic, and those are the people we're coming out after, and we're calling their sins for what they are, and we put it on paper, and we're going to take their monies their way. You know, you got all these towns with all this money, and all these different agencies with all this money that they get from the people. Look what the courts get. I mean, they charge us $400 to go into a court in the federal level, $310 here in New York on the state level. And wait a second here. I thought we already paid for those buildings. I thought we were paying these people salaries. I thought we bought the paper, the computers, the printers, and we put secretaries in there. We're hiring all these people. Why are they taking more money from us? Don't they get enough? What are they doing with that money? Okay? And we know what they're doing with that money. You know, they're filling their own pockets with the money. They're creating their own extra retirements on top of things, and I'm sure there's a lot of digging into that, just putting cash in their pockets. Period. And so, you know, so again, the purpose of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is to deal with enemies, both foreign and domestic, that are coming up and guilty of subversion against the Constitution, against we the people, against the United States of America, period. And so we've put their sins on paper, and we'll continue to go forward, and we'll continue to do indictments, and you know, we went after the indictment out there in Lavoie Finnegan, the murder of Lavoie Finnegan, and what they did to the Bundys and all those other people, both out there in Nevada and in Oregon. And now we're going after 9/11. It needs to be dealt with. And we're going to do it honestly. We're going to do it as professionally as we can. We're going to give a lot of consideration as we write these papers and lay this information out. And we're going to make it clear. And you know what? We need to send this, and I'm sure Jeff Sessions at some point is going to agree with us, and even the President of the United States. This has got to go now before a jury. Let the people decide, because that's our law. That's common law. We have a problem. Clearly there's a crime. Let the trial juries deal with trying to figure that out and decide what they're going to do. You know. Anyway, go ahead, Fred.
There's another point that I'd like to bring up. That just it sickens me to the guts to hear these programs, even Fox News, when they have these bar lawyers on there,
mm-hmm.
and they make statements like, "Well, the government will protect you," or "the government is supposed to protect you." And what I read was the government was created to secure and protect our rights, not protect us. Because if it's their duty to protect us, then no one should be given a ticket. No one should have a house taken away. No one should be in prison. I yield.
Well, that's right. And, you know, I'll take every opportunity I can to read what the job and the authority and what our government should be focused in on. And if they're not doing one of these, I think it's seven things. If they're not doing one of these seven things, they have no business doing it at all. And it's right here in the preamble. We, the people of the United States, in order to perform a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure the domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. That's it. Anything they're doing, whatever they want to do in Article 1, Section 8, we've given them certain authorities to do certain things, but it all has to be focusing in fulfilling at least one of those points, because that's what government is all about. Government by consent is government supposed to be for and by the people. And we consent, they've taken away our consent. They tell us it's the ballot box, and they fix that too. You know, they got all that electronic stuff going on, and we have no idea what's going on inside that box. Well, we do know what's going on inside that box. They're cheating. But in any event, you know, government by consent, they took it away from us. We need to take back the political process. Therein is the committeemen. Very powerful, and we could take it all back. All we have to do is have independent people that educates themselves enough to be able to understand what it is that they need to be doing. And it's not a lot. We can do this in grammar school. And anybody that's out of school, they need to get an education. And they only need to spend an hour a day, 5 days, 6 days, 7 days a week. And over time, in the course of a year, they'll have all the knowledge they need to deal with on the political side, and the judicial side. You know, however it is that they have to do, whatever business they have to take care of. But anyway, we control our political process through the committeemen. We control our courts and the judicial process through the grand jury and the trial jury. Okay, and between those two processes alone, ultimately, okay, that and the exercising of our Constitution and making sure that, and that's the job of really the administrators of the grand jury, which is, should be the people. Okay, should be looking for violations to bring it to that grand jury to fix that problem by sending it into the courts and being dealt with and dealing with it. When these people break the law in order to make money, to line their pockets, or because that's what they're doing, that's what it's all about. You know, they have all these special interest groups, especially the legislators, and they're taking in the money, and they ain't going to give anything care about the people that sent them there. They forgot what they're there for. They're too busy doing the will of corporations, of pharma, big pharma, you know, and all these special interest groups. They're so busy doing that. Well, that's a crime. We call that bribery. And, you know, how dare they sell their vote? Because that's what they're doing. They're getting this money to support this issue in order for a company to be positioned above another group of people. This is exactly what's going on in the committeemen. It's the same game. You know, it's all about positioning and the way they lay the politics out. Everybody argues. Everybody's trying to get better positioning. We've got to stop the nonsense. People need to grow up. They need to understand what government is really for. And they got to stop with their positioning things. We could do that by bringing back the educated, elected committeemen. And that's one of the things we, the people here, are doing here at National Liberty Alliance, to bring those people back into power and authority. But, you know, if people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. You know, it is clear. It's not going to happen. So we have to work a little bit. You want liberty? Well, you have to give a little. You're going to have to get educated. You're going to have to give things up for it. And of course, the payoff in the end, especially for your children, is well worth it. But we the people, unfortunately, most of the people are too busy, you know, doing their, what do they call that, the texting here and there, and they don't read books. They can't get into a discussion, it seems. We're training our children to just be looking at this stupid 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 words tweeting here or there, and that's their conversation. Try to have a conversation with some of these kids today, and it's really difficult. And that's what we're training them to be. And a lot of adults have ended up into the same boat already. They're tweeting, and they don't read books no more. They don't get educated. They have no clue how the court works. They have no clue how this government works. They have no idea what the Constitution says. You know, when we go over radio sometime and someone tunes in for the first time, it's probably the first time some of these people are hearing the actual words. You know, it's like people talking about what's going on in the world today. They talk about God, but they have no clue what the Bible says. What good is any of that? Everything is an opinion then at that point, isn't it? Because we have to get back to the source to find the information, and we have to get educated. And without that, we're not going anywhere. So anyway, if it doesn't pass the muster of something there in the preamble, it shouldn't be done. And clearly, we've given government no power, no authority to write any statutes or codes or anything to control our behavior. That's where, you know, we can nullify. And we're not going to get nullification if there's only one person standing here and one person standing here. We, the people, need to stand together. United we stand, divided we fall. We have to educate all of America. Now, we'll not get all of America educated, but that should be our focus. And if we get the people who are actually doing things educated, then we have a chance. Because remember, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participate, and those are the people that need to become educated. Unfortunately, a good amount of those people need to go to jail. We got to get them out of there because they're crooked, and they're involved because they're lining their pockets. They're getting power. They're getting authority. They're getting contracts. They're getting everything, okay? And it's all a big sham. It's RICO on steroids. It's the largest, organized crime system in the world, the U.S. government. And the states are right with them. So it's a problem. Fred?
Yes, sir.
You done?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, okay. Nothing else, and I'm going to move on then, right? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, let's go to someone from Florida.
Yeah, I am Baldi. Hi, John.
How you doing?
Yeah, John, you're killing me with this long comments, but anyway, I almost forgot what I want to ask you. I give you the example who reincarnated King George III. I have in front of me the local ordinance from the municipal corporation, and listen to John. Who invoked the quasi-judicial system? And listen to it. Any elected or appointed public official of the city who recommends or takes quasi-judicial action. He, this local elected or appointed, he acts as the King George, and like Brent just read a few minutes ago, he combined with others to subject us to jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution, and mm-hmm. acknowledged by our law, giving his assent to the acts of pretended legislature. But in the same ordinance, if people read it, they would know how to what kind of action they could take, because you must write to the clerk either you agree or disagree to this process. So that's, I think this is great, because you know what? They try to, they conspire to take our money, but they give you our opportunity to agree or not if people read those ordinances. And I think, John, because in the area where I live, the magistrate only have the hearing once a month, and I attending those hearings, and I think it's the easiest court to beat, and if we show people how to beat them, maybe they go behind us, and we probably build up more constituency. And I'm here.
Well, yeah, you know, King George in America here gets away with it because we, the people, are ignorant. That's why he gets away with it. That's how they do these stupid things, because we're too dumb to know. And until it's too late and we start to get affected by some of these decisions and things that they do in our local government, our state government, and before you know, and our federal government, before you know it, you know, they're taking our guns away. And you know, because we're ignorant, that's the problem. And again, you know, we need to educate the people that are in the process. And we have a plan for the committeemen. Okay, the committeemen is an extremely important part of the process. It's the political process. It what makes it work, and it could make it work right. And all we have to do is two things. We have a carrot, okay? We need to take the system over. We have a way that we can take it over because nobody's elected. We can get elected committeemen in every state. We only need a half a dozen or more, you know, in every state to get elected. And then they take control of what's called the executive committee. At every state level, they have an executive committee. These people are not elected. They have no power. They have no authority. It's all a fraud. And it's, you know, reality is the way one perceives it. You perceive they got power. They think they have power. So therefore, they got power and they exercise it, just like they do in all these courts, all these Nisi Prius courts. They think they have the power and the authority to put people in jail. The people are too ignorant to know that they don't. And so they do it. Even the sheriff doesn't even know. And he receives all these prisoners and puts them in the jail, in the county jail. And he shouldn't be doing it. Okay, he's guilty of putting people in jail without due process, just as much as the judges. And it's all ignorance. Okay, it gets back to ignorance. But the committeemen, okay, we can take that process over very easily. Now, hopefully, we're going to get people and build inside them, and they have to take, and we're going to educate them. They need to take the oath, the sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And we have to hold each other to it. And if we can do that and hold each other to it, we go into the committeeman process, and you know it's easy to take the whole system over. Once you take the executive committee over, it's just you go down and let everybody know, okay, there's a new executive committee. They don't know nothing. They don't understand how it works, and we would be elected. And in that process, you start to teach them the way to do the things right. You set the rules of the committee right, which really don't have any power or authority. It just puts everything in order. That's what the rules are for, is to keep everything in order and to set the times and places for meetings and the purpose of certain meetings. And then, you of course, to decide who you're going to put onto the ticket to get elected. And that's what their job is for. And if they can understand this part of the process and understand that you really do get the chance to decide who's going to get on the ticket. And then we talk to them about statesmen versus all these politicians that are crooks and doing all these terrible things. We talk to them about the power of recall. And again, build inside them a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. We're not going to get everyone to agree, but I think we can get majority. And as we get majority and we hang that carrot before them, we're going to make you elected committeemen instead of appointed committeemen. And you have that whole time of a whole year to educate these people, moving them in the right direction, and then bring them into the system as elected people. And now they're going to make decisions, really, the people, the grassroots. Because if we can't find a way to pass it to the grassroots, we have a problem. And right now, the grassroots are ignorant to the law, they're ignorant to the political process, they're ignorant to the way the court systems run, they're ignorant to the grand jury, the trial jury, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and the most important, the Bill of Rights, which is the ruler, the yardstick of all, okay? And you see, it really is so simple. If people listen for a while, if you can get their attention, and they listen for a while and you lay this out, it really is simple. This is not complex stuff. You don't need to figure out numbers and codes and laws and remember this, that, and the other thing. And you know, this is not that. This is all pure logic, right and wrong, black and white. It is simple. And, you know, of course, there are procedures, and, you know, everyone can learn procedures. It's written in a book. You're not sure. You go open a book up and follow the procedure. It's like a form in a court, you know. Forms are written for a good purpose, to maintain the flow and the focus of whatever that form is for. And so you follow that focus. And, you know, some of these forms are, you know, like, for instance, when you go into a court, I add stuff in there. I type other things and check other boxes, and they don't even pick up on that, but I do it anyway. You know, and I come in a different way because they leave things out so you can't get in. One of the biggest problems we have going on in the courts right now, and we need to stop it, is this electronic filing. That's got to be illegal. That's got to be done away with. First of all, there's no original paperwork in the court to begin with. And, you know, I remember when you go into the court, the very first thing they want the original, okay? Well, that's not happening no more with electronic filing to begin with, number one. The other thing is you can't file a file on demand. It used to be you walk into a court, they refuse to take it in. You put the file on demand. You read them the Riot Act. You let them know this is a crime. You have to do it. Show me if it's prima. Where is the problem? Tell me how it's not prima facie. And they can't tell you, well, then you, that's your job to take it. You don't have the job to decide whether you're going to take it or not. You have to take anything that is in proper form, okay, that's acceptable to them. I can appreciate the form. So you give them the form. And they have to take it. But now with electronic filing, you can't even push a notice and demand on these people. They take your paperwork, and then they, a half hour, an hour later, they kick it back. And they want you to do this. They want you, and I don't want to do this. I file on demand. There is no process for that. On New York State has moved to electronic filing. The federal courts have moved. A lot of them moved to the electronic filings, but they're still permitting, you know, that you can file the papers, you know, regular papers in the court. That's what I want to do. I want to file them directly. Yeah, it's easy. You could throw it into your computer and, you know, and you send it electronically to them, and there's no paper. You still got to serve everyone else anyway, so why not just build right, get the extra one up and serve it into the court? But you know that's a problem. Anyway, we need to deal with that one problem. But the committee man process, we can take the political system back. And when the people on the grassroots gets a little bit of an education and understands what their job is, what they need to do, and what makes America what America is, we start getting rid of the politics. Read George Washington's farewell address. He laid it all out. He told the future of what was going to happen in America, and you'll find that's the problem we have right now. We're divided one against another. These people have lifted themselves up to power and seized control of the whole machinery and then destroyed everything behind us. So you don't even know how to get back there, how to take this process back. But they left enough of a remnant here in New York that we have the roadmap to get back to it. And I'm sure some other states. But in New York, we have the roadmap. And we have the original law, which they ripped pages out of, which we couldn't find when we went up to the archives. And we were talking to the lady up there that was, at the desk, at the receptionist, and we were telling her what we were looking for. And we're looking back into the 1909 law. 1911 is when they changed everything. But 1909, and we found the books, but there were pages ripped out, and we couldn't find it. And we were complaining to the woman, and one of the guys that was working there heard us, and he says, oh, you know, this stuff is all on microfiche back here. We went into the microfiche. We got electronic copies. We have electronic copies of it. You know, we can print them out. And, so we fed them into the computer. We made electronic copies on it, and we got the law the way it's supposed to be. Okay, the way it was, and they wanted to disappear, okay? But we still have enough remnants here in New York State law where the elected committeemen, that process is still inside the law. And it's a little hard to see, but it's clear, especially when you look at the 1909 election law when they changed everything. As a matter of fact, that the law book up in New York in the archives went from something like maybe, I don't know, maybe an inch thick at most, 3/4 of an inch, to like 6 or 8 inches thick with all kinds of garbage, and not just election law, all kinds of stuff that never was there before, okay? They just put all this statutory stuff in there, and they just piled it in and pushed it in, and over time they started exercising it, and now we're just captive. We're in a statutory prison here, just like you are in your state or anybody else in their state, same thing. So. But anyway, we could take it back, but it's going to require people to get educated and step up and want to do the right thing. I think we could do it. It's a slow move, but we're working on it. Okay, let me go to the next caller. Are you done?
Yeah,
you want to make a final comment?
I may only add that I educated my commissioners because when they passed the ordinance, they only passed by the name only, not with the text. And I believe they're unaware what is inside. There could be that somebody else write the ordinance later without the knowledge.
Yeah, well, ordinances are not law, and they will try to apply it as law. We know.
We know that. You don't have to repeat that.
Yeah.
I know, but I just going to show you there is, you know, people must put in writing with the city clerk if they agree to this process or not. And from my observation last 6 months, there no such a thing been raised.
Right.
Nobody even know, because if I was there, because I read it, I would say, okay, I didn't put any notice with the clerk. What kind of jurisdiction you invoking? What the guy would, what the magistrate would say? Mm-hmm. That's my point. And you know what? What I'm saying, the commissioners passed this thing by title only, and that's the fraud. That's the conspiracy. And that's what I am saying, you know, and you don't have to answer.
Right.
I agree with you.
What
else? Yeah.
I agree with you on that. So.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for the call. Okay, let's take our next caller. Let's take, Ed from Connecticut. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Thank you, John. Appreciate that. It's always great being on the call and listening to all this good stuff. I know you were mentioning a little bit about foreclosures. That always perks me up.
That is the biggest crime. You know, if only the people would open their eyes just to that one thing and raise up and stop the nonsense, we could do it. But again, you know, it goes back to Jefferson. If people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen.
I know those sayings are incredible. And then the stuff you have about Kennedy, too. It's amazing the things Kennedy said. One thing I always wanted to go, I know you might have mentioned this in the past quite a while ago, is that would the taxes, part of the reason that they're so high is that they, the cities, they're not being creative to get things under control. It's like they, and just correct me if I'm wrong, they're not taking any time. In other words, it's like if they take any time to be creative and to come up with ways and roll up their sleeves and really try to save money and then, of course, increase their revenues, that would be taking their own personal time away. Because when they walk into work, they think it's their time. So if they do anything for the people, it's actually taking from them. And I think that's the reason that the taxes are so high, because it's so easy.
Well, look, and if they just went there and did the job they were supposed to do, they wouldn't need any money, you know? That's to begin with. But first of all, I'm not sure what taxes you're talking about. There's the only really lawful tax that I can think of ultimately is sales tax, especially for that level, state and local. It's sales tax.
Yeah. And that's the kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing I want to hear from you as far as, because you see, if people would go to these monthly meetings and not only just complain about the taxes, but just present what could be done, to lower them,
that's a big task, because you got lots of towns, you got lots of cities, you got counties, you got all these different government levels, and you know there's only one way to take that political process back, on a local level especially. Okay, but you know the grand jury can help with that, but there's only one way. You got to take the political process back, and to take the political process back, you have to take the committeemen back, and you have to put elected committeemen that have a little. Again, you don't need a big education to understand how this whole thing works. Okay, this is real simple stuff. It seems complicated because they've made it complicated. Okay, but the simplicity of the whole thing is basically we want people to obey the Constitution. That's the only people we're going to put in office. The committeemen are the guys who decide who's going on the tickets. We need to understand that. That's a powerful position. And if we take control of that process on the grassroots level and we give them a litmus test, tell me about the Second Amendment. Tell me about the Fifth Amendment. Oh, you don't know those things? Well, look, when you know those things, come on back. Go out to nationallibertyalliance.org. Take some tests out there. Read, learn, come back, and we'll talk to you again. And then you let them know. When you get in, then when they come back and they know these things, well, you better keep it in office because we're going to watch you like a hawk. And you start taking any of that funny money, you start coming outside of your power and authority, we're going to be on top of you by bringing them back out of office. We'll recall you. Or if we think it's a crime, we'll go talk to the administrators over at the grand jury and let them bring it before the grand jury and let the grand jury call these people on the carpet and decide what they're going to do with them. whether they're going to indict. Maybe the guy will repent because he's, you know, he made a mistake. That's fine. But look at, you know, this is the only way we're gonna take this country. We have government only by consent. Consent through the committeemen, the political process, and consent by the in our judicial process through grand juries and trial juries. And we, the people, must control the administration for those juries because the fox cannot control it because they're just going to get right back to RICO on steroids just where we're at now. These prosecutors will not go after a judge, okay? And a prosecutor won't go after another prosecutor, okay? It's a rare, rare situation when those two things happen. And I've talked to sheriffs, well, we can't go after that judge because we know we have to convince the prosecutor and he's not going to go along with this. And, you know, let's go out and we'll talk. Oh, no, you can't get it done. Well, sheriff, look it. Go get yourself an indictment. Go down to the courtroom, courthouse. Go see the clerk there and say, is the grand jury in today? No, they'll be in on Tuesday. I want to get my name on. I want to talk to them. What do you want to talk about? Don't worry about it. I want to talk to them. And if the prosecutor gives you a call, Mr. Sheriff, it's none of your business. I'm going to talk to the grand jury. You going to tell me I can't talk to the grand jury? Go in. And you know what? If you got to, go in and talk to the clerk and say, you got a grand jury room empty right now? Pull 25 people off the street. Make some phone calls. Get people into that room. Get your indictment and go arrest that judge. Go arrest that prosecutor. Get your indictment. They don't understand. That's the power and authority they have. They are the constitutional officer. But they're as dumb as we are, and that's our problem. We have to fix that problem. And it starts with fixing us, ourselves. And then when you get the sheriff, when you become the committee man and the sheriff comes up and he doesn't know nothing about the Constitution, well, you let him know, look, at re-election's coming up, and if you want to stay sheriff, you come back in a month or two or whatever it is, and you better be able to tell us about this Constitution. You better be able to tell us about your power and authority. You be able to tell us how you're going to arrest that judge or how you're going to arrest that prosecutor that's breaking the law. And if you can't tell us how to do those things, well, there's another guy running for sheriff. Maybe we'll support him. We're not going to put you back on the ticket. Believe me, you called the sheriff as a committeeman up. You don't even ask him. You tell him, we're having a meeting on Monday. We want to talk to you. We'll see you at 7:30. He's going to be there. Any elected official gets a call from a committeeman, particularly the chair, but any committeeman, letting them know that we got you on the roster to talk to this coming week or next week or whatever. They are not going to be there. They will be there because they do not get into office without the support of the committeeman. Now, some of these smaller offices, people can walk their own papers and get enough signatures, but most of them, you still need 1,500 signatures, and these people are too lazy to do that anyway, and that's not a simple task, you know, to get 1,000 or 1,500 signatures or 1,200 signatures. That's pretty hard. That's a lot of work, okay? Committeemen do that in one day, pop. They go out because they got so many members, we decide who we're going to support. Everybody goes out and gets, 10, 20 signatures, and we got all the signatures we need. You see, people need to understand how this thing works. It's very simple, logical, and it truly does give us government by consent if we pick up the power and the authority to do it. We need to do it. And don't think the other guy is going to do it, because I can tell you right now, he's not. You got to do it. Anyway, Ed, did I lose you?
Oh, no, I'm right here. No,
okay.
Yeah. No,
anything
I always like. Yeah, just I know you always have good ideas about the way the cities or states could either increase their income, cut their spending, and you see, it's a double problem. See, it's one thing not to be creative and not be able to make that happen, but then whatever money they do get, then they're taking from it too. So I was thinking also that there could be an incredible accountability with some type of computer system where people would have access to all that, because we are paying the taxes, so we're a part of the city, and it should all be on a system where every single dollar is accounted for, and that could help out.
Every single dollar definitely should be accounted for. I mean, look at that's what the controller of the county is for. He's to make sure that an accounting is taking place from every dollar that goes out and dollar that might come in, okay? That's number one. But, you know, when you go back into this whole system, look, I'm not going to rest, and maybe the Lord will take me by then, but I'm not going to rest until every city and town and village court is shut down. And you shut down the you shut down the courts, all the police departments disappear. Now you're stuck with the sheriff. So the sheriff will have to give a little money. The county's got to give their money. Instead of giving some money to the town, they give the sheriff a little more money, and they get a little more of a police force, make sure they have some satellite offices, so on and so forth, to do the duties that they have to do. Okay, when these counties stop thinking that they can write law, they think it's law, it's ordinances and codes and stuff, and they think it's law. It's not law. Well, there's not going to be any police to enforce those things. Those are code law enforcement officers. That's what they are. All state police, county police, town police, village police, city police, with the exception of New York City here in New York, okay, because they did something different down there. But anyway, all of these different police departments, they're code enforcement officers with a gun. That's what they are, and a siren and a badge, okay? Look, at all this stuff belongs over to the sheriff. They need to be taking care of this business. But anyway, you shut down the courts, you'll shut down all those police departments, you won't have those problems. And then when the town thinks that they can create some kind of an ordinance to control people and to do things and to make some money, well, who's going to enforce it? Sheriff is going to enforce it. He's a constitutional officer. He's not a code enforcement officer. He's violating their unalienable rights. He can't do that. You see, we can shut it all down. The whole thing can fall apart very easy. It took them a lot to put this thing together. Huge amount of effort and energy went in to building and constructing this prison that they've created for us. Okay, huge amount of effort. And literally, all we need is a few people in every state educated and educating others within the state. I mean, really, when we think about the population of the United States, the number of people we need, it's minuscule. It's nothing, okay? And we could take it all back and shut it all down and become a common law people. And enough of the nonsense. And it could be done. It could be done. But the people got to step up, get educated, and do it. And if they don't do it, then they're not going to get it. All right, Ed, I got to move on. Excellent. I can get one more call.
Yep, no, that's excellent. Yep, no, thank you, John.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's take our next caller here. Let's do Michael from New York. Go right ahead, Michael.
Yes, John, thank you very much. What's your experience with the Precipice? Are they worth doing?
A Precipice, I'm not familiar with it, so.
A writ of Precipice?
Yeah,
it's like
it's
an order. It's an order to the court with, it's almost like a quo warranto, I would think. And it has.
Maybe Brent, are you still here? Maybe you can comment on that. I don't have any knowledge of that. I apologize.
Oh, that's okay.
I'll have to look into it. How do you spell it? Do you know?
Yeah, it's P-R-A-C-E-A-P, something like that.
I'll take a look at it. Is it a writ?
Yes, it's a writ, common law writ.
Okay. I'll look at that. Maybe try to challenge me on next Monday. Maybe I'll see if I can look into it before that.
Great.
All right?
Yeah, that would be good.
And I'll give you
okay.
my thoughts once I understand what it is.
Please,
okay?
That would be great. Yes, sir. I thank you very much.
Right,
okay, I'm out. Yep, thank you. Have
hey,
a blessed
thank
night.
You.
Thanks.
You
yep.
too.
Good night. Good night.
All right, good night. Jeremiah, you got 2 minutes, so let's keep it short. Go right ahead.
Okay. I guess, wow. John.
You can't do it in 2 minutes, can you?
I can't. I actually can't. I want to thank you guys for doing your show. I mean, everybody on here coming on these calls is super crucial to the embodiment of what is basically bringing back something that actually has not been established in America yet, which is the true common law. You know, I mean, we've had nothing but Roman civil authority in this country for a long time. Oh, I think
they
I remember
started,
my question
started,
now.
They started destroying this thing
yeah.
when they were debating it, okay?
Yeah,
back
exactly.
Back in the Federalist Papers. The enemy was
yeah.
already in the House. Jefferson, you know, made that point, and he pointed his
mm-hmm.
fingers at a few people. But go ahead.
But basically, like, I guess what I'm saying is, are you you understand that this is kind of an esoteric principle to bring back this type of common law into, you know, to help the people, right?
Like, up to the people to take it. If they want it, they're going to have it, but they have to know about it. We're doing our best. This is the job of every member of National Liberty Alliance, is to get the word out of what's available to the people. Come, take a look, and see. Do you want to take your nation back? Do you want to live with true liberty? Or do you want to live under this tyranny that we have today? Do you want to live with all these, you know, mobsters with RICO on steroids in every single, you know, government agency out there, whether it be a local town? I mean, they're all on the take. It is really bad. When I was a kid, I used to hear talk about Mexico and South America, how bad it is. Look, it's worse here right now in the United States of America. Well, worse than what they were or ever will be. Okay, it's bad.
Definitely. Definitely bad. I mean, I think we have to pay attention to, like, local organization as it, like, so finely tuned that we create local our own documents in a separate legislative state. Because I remember earlier on the call,
we're going to have to pick this up next week. I'll give you 10 seconds.
I mean, we can. Oh, 10 seconds.
10 seconds. Otherwise, we'll talk next week. I hear the music coming.
Wait, God save the Republic.
Okay. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Lord bless you. We'll see you next Monday. And anybody interested in that Bible study, 11 o'clock to 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here in this room. Page up shortly. Bible study.